Right. Good morning. The Arizona Board of Behavioral Health Examiners will now come to order. It is 9:01 on Friday, September 10th, 2021. Could we get a roll call, please?
Kimberly Bailey.
Present.
Robert Charles.
Present.
Mary Coonrod.
Present.
Cedric Davis.
Good morning.
Patricia Dobratz.
Good morning.
Lynette Hennigan. Megan Kramer. Cassandra Parr.
Present.
Heidi Quinlan, Mark Shin,
present.
Gerald Szymanski, Antoine Trotter,
present.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Patricia Dobratz. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, a professional member, and the board's chairperson. At this time, I ask everybody to please make sure your phones are on silent or turned off, including all board members and board staff. Throughout the meeting, if somebody needs to use the restroom, it's down the hall across from the elevators. And for your convenience, there are vending machines right outside the boardroom to your left. This is an open meeting, and it's being recorded. The audio from the meeting will be posted to the board's website. As such, we ask everyone's assistance in speaking clearly and into the microphones. At this point, I would like other board members and board staff to please introduce themselves, starting with Mr. Charles.
Bob Charles, public member.
Cassandra Parr, professional member.
Antoine Trotter, public member.
Kimberly Bailey, professional member.
Doc Davis, licensed clinical social worker and professional member.
Mark Shen, professional member.
Mary Coonrod, public member.
Erin Yabu, deputy director.
Alyssa Vanderveen, operations manager.
Ian Hermand, assistant director.
Toby Zavala, executive director.
Mona Baskin, assistant attorney general representing the board.
Thank you. Just for the record, our first agenda item, number three, our general meeting minutes from August 13th, need to be tabled due to lack of quorum. So we'll be tabling that. And going to agenda item number four, which is our consent agenda. Through the cases on the consent agenda, and I'm going to call them one by one to see if there's anybody here that would like to pull the case. What I mean by pull the case is that you're interested in addressing the board rather than having us review and vote on it as it appears on the agenda with the recommendation. So first we'll be going to 4A, which is our cases recommended for dismissal. Is there anybody here who wishes to pull A1, Tara Catanzaro? A2, Kathleen Mihalik? Okay. You wish to pull that matter? Okay. We'll come right back to that. A3, Kristen Pulver. All right. At this time, is there a motion to dismiss A1 and 3?
Davis moves it.
Parr second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. A2, Kathleen Mihalik. Is the licensee present? Please come forward, sir. And, yep, I'm sorry. You can have a seat. And if you press the button on the microphone, it'll turn green.
Thank you. Can you hear me? Or?
And if you could introduce yourself for the record.
My name is David Segui, S-E-G-U-I.
And you're the complainant in this matter.
Correct.
All right, we're first going to hear a brief summary from board staff, and then we'll give you a chance to address the board.
Thank you.
Following a review of the investigative record, there does not appear to be clear and convincing evidence to support the complainant's allegations, and that's all I have unless you have any questions.
Any questions from board members for Ms. Zavala? We do have all of the materials from this matter, but you have up to 5 minutes if there's additional things that you would like to add for us to consider.
I didn't prepare. I try to do things naturally, so I'm not a public speaker by any means. But
no worries.
My concern is Ms. Mihalik completely overstepping her bounds. She was on my case simply to do a home study. She proceeded to do the home study in my home with my two boys, who I had custody of solely. Fell asleep three times at my kitchen table. I offered her a Red Bull. She gave me a story about her grandmother, being a grandmother and watching her grandchildren all night, which I believed at the time. She informed me. She continued to fall asleep, snoring asleep at my table, at my kitchen table, during our interview, which was cut short. She informed me that she had visited Mother Pryor. She told me about the residence that she visited, which was not her residence, mother's residence. I informed Kathy that that is not the residence. I actually pulled out documents from the court, showed her the residence at which she did live. She actually staged an apartment for the home study. Kathy knew this. Kathy admitted this. Dr. Lavitt, Ron Lavitt, who she was working for, admitted he knew, admitted that Kathy knew. It was never written in a report. It was never documented anywhere that Mother staged an apartment that she had never lived in. The boys had never ever stepped foot in. I think that a person in her position should report the truth to the courts. That's just one small incident. She then took it upon herself to call an impromptu, and you guys have the video of this horrific incident with my two boys who were diagnosed with level 3 PTSD from the abuse by their mother. Kathy had no regard to that, ignored all of the court-appointed therapist notes, Dr. Branton's notes, that clearly stated that if any reunification with mother was in place, which there wasn't, there was nothing like, there was no quarters in place for her to have any visitation contact, that there would be weeks in advance of therapy to prepare them. Kathy took it upon herself to call an impromptu meeting. She was not authorized to do so. Dr. Lavitt even informed me of such. Forced the boys into a 45-minute meeting in which my now 13-year-old Brock and a 16-year-old Chai, Brock urinated himself. They ran down the street, public street. My two children, 13 and 10 at the time, were running down a public street traumatized. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a doctor. But I recognize trauma responses when I see them. Shivering, shaking, petrified. The video is anger. All of those emotions were evident in the video. That meeting should have been stopped immediately. But Kathy continued to grill the boys, defend the mother. She even admitted trying to trick the boys. Who told you that? And when the boys responded that mom told me, she would then brush it off. What she was wanting was the boys to say that father said that it was done to them, or that father told them this information. It didn't come from me, it came from the mother. They said it in the video. They ignored it. The meeting went on and on until the boys ran down the street. She thought it was funny. She didn't think it was a big deal. When I showed up and the boys were walking in the parking lot with her, she finally caught them. I was appalled. I couldn't believe that this would go on in the family court system, but that's just the beginning of the nightmare of my children's experience. I have further information from Jill Soderman. Jill Soderman, who runs the Foundation of Child Victims of the Family Courts out of South Carolina. She's talked from the parking lot. Additional information of Kathy Mihalik with multiple cases in this valley with other families. Where she bullies, she bullied me, she bullied my children, she bullies, that's her tactic, bullying. She oversteps her bounds, she makes threats, she threatened my kids not to be able to see me again, to recant their allegations of abuse. A PhD did a trauma assessment. I wasn't there. Level 3 PTSD, that's the highest level PTSD, and has been ignored by the family courts since then. Ms. Mihalik ruined Shai's therapeutic relationship with Dr. Jones at the time. She called me and said that Dr. Jones would have mother in the next meeting with Shai. That was never decided. I went to Dr. Jones and Dr. Lavitt. They both said that Kathy Mihalik presented that idea, and they both said that would be a horrible idea. He's not ready for that. Kathy took it upon herself to inform me on the phone with three different phone calls. I told her, Kathy, I don't think that's a good idea. He trusts Dr. Jones. They have a great relationship. And to bring mom in, is going to sabotage that. She said, her exact words were, you do not make the rules. The judge makes the rules, and I make the rules. I'm sorry, you're a home study counselor. You don't make the rules either. The judge does make the rules. The judge did not make that decision. She did. So I informed my son as we're walking in to expect mother to be in. I didn't want to be blindsided. Turns out mother wasn't there. But Shai was already prepared. He went in, and he thought Dr. Jones was party to this decision. So the end of that relationship ended. Kathy Monoholic never took credit, blame, whatever you want to call it, for that. They blamed me. Okay. Okay, that was just another incident. It was Dr. Branson's notes, the boy's therapist, if any specific plans, quote, of any intensive reunification experience is set, or if any kind of reintegration of parenting time with mother is planned, then this psychologist recommends that clients attend therapy weekly at that point. That was never done. The boys hadn't seen that therapist in 8 months at the time. My boys hadn't been in therapy in over 2 years. Level 3 PTSD. She's a danger to society by even holding the license. I'm sorry. My children, subsequent to this, were sent to, because of her, not just her, but other therapists who were doing this all over the valley. And this is being investigated by federal agents right now. The parental alienation scam, where they took my kids, out of a children's hospital, shuttled them in a van to California, to Family Bridges Camp, run by Randy Rand, who has no license, no facility. They do have a hotel. They hop around hotels. No license. Kamala Harris took his license. No authorization, no state oversight. I didn't find out for 2 days that my children were removed and shuttled in a van against their will. 4 days of brainwashing, being told that you'll never see your dad again if you don't recant your allegations of abuse. My kids will not recant to this day. So they spent 4 days being terrorized. Other children, there's children all over the country going through it. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, and I appreciate you guys' time. I know it's valuable. Go look up St. Louis situation. Same things going all over the country. Same template. I have another mother here in this valley who has Kathy McCullough on her case and the same four other therapists on the case. Word for word. Our paperwork is word for word. It's a template. The only thing changed is the name of the parent and the children. They took the scam is to put the kids back in the hands of the abuser. As soon as the protective parent reports it like we're told we're supposed to do, I'm the bad guy for reporting what my children reported. My children taken away from me. I'm forced to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars, some in the millions. I'm unfortunately in that position already, to get your kids back. They tell you 90 days, it's never. There's not one case in the entire nation where kids ever got back in 90 days. It's permanent.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I do have to ask you to wrap up.
I will wrap up. Thank you. Right. On 1/28/2021, my oldest son ran away from the house with a black eye. I was contacted by the neighbor we ran away to. Police report. Police investigated it, sent him right back to mother. Mother evaded police DCS for 3 weeks. 3 weeks. I'd like to hate to think what would happen if I had done that. Right? The therapist all protected her attorney. Detective Hernandez was on the case. Evelyn Hernandez. She reported to me, and I have it on recording. Donna's attorney, the TI, and the best interest attorney called her asking her to drop the investigation. On 3/16/2021, her current husband, who's an ex-teammate of mine, I used to play baseball, ex-friend, used to be a friend, can't see his two kids in San Diego court, or state of California, because of abuse, sprayed vinegar in my youngest son's eyes 5 times. In his eyes. It's on video because my older son recorded it. It was all over. It's all over social media.
Can I ask you to...
The abuse hasn't stopped. Okay, I'll put this...
Mahalik.
Ms. Mahalik is... Her actions are how my kids got sent to this camp.
I just asked you to wrap it up.
Okay.
That's what I was asking. Sorry.
I think it's irresponsible. I think it's criminal. And in fact, I know it's criminal to ignore the cries of my children. My children are still crying out for help. 2 incidents. Sprayed vinegar in my son's eyes. My son's eyes right now are blurry and he can't see well, dry. My son could have permanent eye damage. because of what these therapists continue to do to my, to not just my child, children all over the valley. This has to stop. This has to stop. The one thing, you talk about a pandemic in this country, the pandemic is the child trafficking and the abuse of our children. That has to stop. That has to, nope, and it's not going to stop. There's mama bears all over the country that are tired of it because this is going all over the country, and the same therapists are involved all over the country. We are doing a lot of investigating, and her name keeps popping up. So this just has, I'm sorry, I appreciate your time. This has to stop, not only for my children, but for every other child out there that doesn't have somebody crying, fighting for them and advocating for them. So that's my...
Thank you. Let me see if any board members have any questions.
All right, thank you. I just want to say that every bit of evidence has been presented throughout this process, not just to you, to everyone, has been ignored. Police, ECF, everyone. I'm sorry.
To stop right there.
I'm good.
I want to explain the process. So what happens next is this is going to be...
Yeah.
You can stay right there. This is going to be our time to talk amongst ourselves. This is when we deliberate with all the information we have. And so we just ask that you not interrupt. But you can stay right there if you'd like. And
Madam Chair, can I interrupt for a second? We did get a number from Ms. Mihalik, and I think that it would be appropriate for us to give her a call, especially if the board members have any questions. I recognize she missed the information from the complainant. But
does she know we're going to be calling her?
Good morning. This is Kathleen.
Hi, Kathleen. This is Patricia, the board's chairperson.
Hello, Patricia.
Good morning. Your case,
good morning.
Your case was on the consent agenda recommended for dismissal. It has been pulled from the consent agenda, and we did hear from the complainant and wanted to reach out. You would have up to 5 minutes to address the board if you would like, or we could move forward and see if any board members have questions for you, whatever you prefer.
Well, I would be happy to provide any additional information that was needed. I can simply say that I was not providing therapy. I was working under Dr. Labatt's direction and his court order, and I did not have anything to do with the decisions that were made, and I didn't have anything to do with whether the kids continued in therapy or not. Those were not my decisions, and I didn't give input into that. If there are questions from any of the board members, I'm very happy to answer them.
Thank you. Do board members have any questions for the licensee? Not appear that there are any questions. We're going to move into our deliberations. You're welcome to stay on the line. I would ask that you mute your phone and not interrupt.
Yes, I can do that. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I first want to start off by thanking the complainant for being here. Is there a weird noise? Should I keep going? Is that okay? Everybody? Is that bother everybody? Okay. And I want to just my mic switch.
Is it? It isn't just his mic. It's the system.
I'll try to. Okay, I'll do my best. So I just want to thank the plan for being here and providing that information, to say sorry for anything you and your children have been through. I want to make that clear. I read the entire record, all the information presented by the board, and in reference to the current complaint. I do agree with the board's findings that there is no clear and convincing evidence of unprofessional conduct. Before I make a motion, I wanted to see if my peers had anything to add.
Is there any further discussion?
So I move that we dismiss the complaint.
Is there a second?
Par second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We appreciate you being here and the information you've provided. And Ms. Mihalik, we appreciate you being available as well. This will conclude this matter. Thank you. Does it sound okay except for when we're on the phone? Is that what's happening?
turn the volume, they turn the volume down a little bit. Does it sound okay to those of you out there? Okay. All right. So let's go to Consent Agenda 4B. These are cases recommended for dismissal with a letter of concern. Again, I'm going to read through to see if there's anybody who wishes to pull the case, meaning you wish to address the board rather than having us move forward, how it appears on the agenda. B1, Tawny Bill. B2, Sean Keel. B3, Donald Linville. B4, Janet Walker. Right. Is there a motion to dismiss with a letter of concern B1 through 4?
Davis moves it.
Shen, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And that will bring us to 4C, cases recommended for release from consent agreements. C1, Aaron Jones Cunningham. Anybody here for that case? Is there a motion to release from the consent agreement?
Davis moves it.
Is there a second?
Bailey, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. That will bring us to 4E, cases recommended for opening a complaint and acceptance of a proposed signed disciplinary consent agreement. E1, Jessica Reed. Want two separate motions, Ms. Cavella?
No, one would be fine.
Is there a motion to open a complaint and accept the proposed signed disciplinary consent agreement?
Davis moves it.
Trotter second.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey?
Aye.
Robert Charles?
Aye.
Mary Coonrod?
Aye.
Cedric Davis?
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz?
Aye.
Cassandra Parr?
Aye.
Mark Shin?
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Thank you. 4G, recommended for acceptance of proposed signed non-disciplinary consent agreement. G1, Trudy Johnson. G2, Mercedes Cisneros-Watson. Are you pulling the matter?
No, I'm sorry.
Okay. What was that? Did you wish to address the board? Okay. Please come forward. So this is G2, and will you state your name for the record? And are you the complainant in this matter?
Yes.
Ms. Zavala, anything from board staff before we hear from the complainant?
This was on the consent agreement or the consent agenda for a non-disciplinary consent agreement, which has been signed based on the fact that it didn't appear that the information was sufficient to seriousness to merit disciplinary action. So board staff is recommending the board members to accept the non-disciplinary consent agreement to have 6 clock hours of the staying out of trouble or an equivalent course. And that's all, unless you have any questions for me.
Do board members have any questions? You have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Okay, so I started seeing the thing that we already have at the end of this year. And that's 4 times. For each visit, I was charged $100 with that pay, even though it had all my insurance information. I didn't know it at the time until I talked to my insurance that because of COVID, any virtual visits were there would be no cost. So there would be no co-pay on that day. So I relayed this information for more than once and asked him for my credit. And more than once, he told me that, the test back because I already paid. She said it's more than once. She sent the test back, you paid. We did it. She finally paid through that. After I think, after she got the call from Sharpie up here, and she asked me to sign a receipt she never increased the amount of unemployment, which is a lot, because she did. And I asked for it. And this has been a very stressful, point. I don't know how many hours I spent on the phone trying to get this resolved. At one point in time, she insurance company, and I was going to call her together. She sent it to the boss, basically. She just wasn't buzzing, I think, and story. And so we called her, and it was about 9 o'clock in the service. And she didn't answer. The following day, I got a call from her with, how dare you call me when I'm on the phone with her, when I'm in the news with a client. And it went back and forth for a while, and then I got so upset that I just hung up. And at that point in time, that's when I filed a complaint. And I guess my big concern is that if she's done that to me, has she done this to other people?
We appreciate you being here. Are there questions from board members for the complainant? This will be our time to talk amongst ourselves. We ask that you not interrupt. Doc, I believe this.
Thank you very much. As much as I can appreciate the angst, the sentiments of the licensee, of the complainant, and I can appreciate to a certain extent the position of the licensee, things have been very different during the coronavirus pandemic. And I'm glad that the complainant received her money back, and I'm sorry that the understandings were unclear and so forth, but I agree with the analysis that I see before me, and I'd like to give my peers an opportunity to have a word if you see fit to have a word about it.
Input from any other board members?
I'm in agreement. I think that education is appropriate.
Very well, then I move to dismiss this case and accept the proposed signed non-disciplinary consent agreement.
Not a dismissal, but acceptance of the proposed signed.
Acceptance of the proposed signed, yes.
Non-disciplinary.
Yes.
Is there a second?
Bailey, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you so much for being here. I do want to go back to G1, which is Trudy Johnson. Is there a motion to accept that proposed signed non-disciplinary consent agreement?
Davis moves it.
Is there a second?
Bailey, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And that will conclude our consent agenda. We'll be moving to agenda item number 7, which are complaints and other disciplinary matters. This is the time and place scheduled for the board to review disciplinary matters. They will be heard by the board pursuant to the authority given to us by ARS 32-3281. Please be aware that we have received and read all of the materials submitted for each matter. During the course of the meeting, if it is necessary to refer to clients, including those that may be complainants, please use initials only. Those licensee or applicants on today's agenda received by mail a board meeting notice, which included a list of potential actions the board could take once we reach the deliberations phase. The list is not exclusive, and there may be other options the board considers. The board will first hear a brief summary of the case from board staff. Once the staff is done, other interested parties, including the complainant if applicable, and the professional will be given an opportunity to address the board. In order to give everyone the same opportunity to address the board, we ask those speaking not take time repeating information that the board has already received. You and your legal counsel, if applicable, will collectively be given the same time to address the board as board staff took to present the investigative report, or 5 minutes, whichever is greater. Please keep in mind that the board has a civility policy that prohibits the use of any type of disorderly conduct. Those violating the policy will be removed from the meeting room. Once the board concludes its discussions with the parties, we'll move into our deliberations. While the parties are free to stay and listen, we ask that you respect the fact that it's now our time to discuss amongst ourselves and not interrupt that process. Again, I want to remember everybody, the meeting's being recorded, and we ask that you speak clearly and loudly into the microphone. We will be starting with 7G, Tina Johnson. And Mr. Ryan, are you there on that matter? If you want to come forward. Is there a complainant present? You are? Okay. Do you wish to address the board as well? Okay. So I will ask that everybody remain seated, and then we'll see if the board has any questions when we get to that time, and then you can come forward if so. All right. And can we first hear a brief summary from board staff?
Madam Chair, members of the board, I also want to remind you that there was a supplement for this matter that was uploaded to the portal. The supplement was rather brief from the licensee, basically on her intent on how to use her assessments moving forward in her practice, so that is there for your review as well. Following review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation: ARS 32-3251-16K, engaging in any conduct or practice that is contrary to recognized standards of ethics in the behavioral health profession as it relates to the NASW Code of Ethics 1.07F, Privacy and Confidentiality. This recommendation is based on the following: since 5 of 19, licensee has been licensed with the board as a licensed clinical social worker. From 121 to 221, licensee provided complainant and wife couple counseling. On 124-21 and 125-21, respectively, wife and complainant individually completed a partner global assessment of relationship function partner questionnaire. Complainant and wife signed separate informed consent documentation that indicated the following: quote, we cannot share information about you without your written consent, end quote. And additionally, the questionnaire's complainant and wife each completed indicated the following: do not discuss the questions or answers with your partner, and your answers will not be shown to anyone without your written permission. Despite these assurances of confidentiality, on 2-5-21, during a session with both complainant and wife, licensee verbally shared information from the questionnaires with both complainant and wife. It is concerning that licensee conveyed sensitive information between complainant and wife without written release of information, despite the questionnaires indicating it would not be shared without written permission. In doing so, licensee failed to preserve the confidentiality of the information shared by complainant and wife. Additionally, licensee acknowledges verbally explaining the complainant and wife's individual sessions were confidential and served the purpose of sharing information they may not be comfortable sharing with each other. The following explanations licensee provided to board staff are highly concerning and demonstrate a lack of insight. Licensee did not share information from complainant's individual session, but rather shared information from the questionnaires. The questionnaires stated the information would not be shown to anyone without written permission. However, licensee did not show complainant or wife each questionnaires, but rather shared the information out loud during the session. Reading each other's answers from the questionnaires is different than physically showing complainant and wife copies of their completed questionnaires.
In providing these explanations to justify appropriateness of her actions, licensee is arguing a difference without a distinction. Additionally, following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support ARS 3232516P failing to conform to minimum practice standards as developed by the board as it relates to consent to treat, treatment plan, client record, and telepractice. This recommendation is based on the following. On 1/13/21, complainant and wife each signed separate informed consent documents that were missing several elements. Additionally, in review of the treatment plan and the progress notes and the telepractice requirements, there were several deficiencies and elements missing on them as well. After receipt of the complaint, licensee provided board staff with updated clinical documents that appear to meet the board's minimum requirements. It is problematic that licensee has been in a private practice setting in Arizona for approximately 2 years and was not aware of basic documentation requirements. And that's all I have unless you have any questions for me.
Thank you, Ms. Bella. Are there questions from board members? Are there questions for the complainant who's present? If we have any questions. Mr. Ryan, if you want to come forward. Turn on the mic and introduce yourselves for the record, please.
Hello, I'm Tina Johnson.
Good morning. I'm Michael Ryan, and I represent Ms. Johnson.
And you have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Good morning. Well, I prepared a brief comments for relating to this case. Given that I've never been in this position of defending my practice, I'll do my best to convey my thoughts about the complaint to this board. I maintain that I did not violate the confidentiality requirements with these clients. They were made aware of the relationship assessment process, as I regularly do with each couple that I see. I do not share anything verbally that was discussed in the confidential session. The purpose of this review session was defined in that first session, and that is to review the results of the assessment. So when I did share that, and for whatever reason, there was an anger outburst that occurred, and that another direction in the session I had to take. As said in the report, I tried to diffuse the situation by giving them steps to regulate these strong emotions, journal their process, and return the next week. I did not see them after that. From my own studies and research in the field of therapy and healing and navigating emotions, it's very complex and sometimes unpredictable. There is no known set of specific treatment modalities that lead to success. Rather, that success is largely based on empathy shown to the client and being able to establish a therapeutic and trusting relationship. So since I started my practice in the late 80s, I have evolved and tried many strategies and modalities depending. But there's one thing that has never changed for me over these years, and that was the importance of finding the best way to establish this therapeutic bond. Each client is unique. The complaint references the time very early in the assessment and treatment planning process. There were many complexities behind this report, and a therapeutic relationship hadn't been established. I believe that emotions can be very powerful drivers. And I believe that these emotions played a role in this report. Since then, I have updated all my forms to meet board requirements and created a new form on what is a relationship assessment to further delineate the process that I verbally walked them through in the beginning. Making the needed adjustments for my practice of many years in Fargo, North Dakota, to a new practice in Cottonwood has been a process of learning and development for me. So I appreciate your thoughtful consideration as you review this report that Jarrett has over. Thank
you. I just have a little bit to add. First of all, it's very clear that Ms. Johnson is regretful that there was a misunderstanding. and there was a misunderstanding here. Ms. Johnson has practiced for many, many years, and she knows what her custom and practice is, just as you professionals know what you do in certain situations. She shared this information with these clients, but clearly they did not understand. So what has she done since to ensure that this doesn't happen in the future? She has, first of all, revised her forms, and in addition to that, the most recent provision is an explanation of the relationship and how it works and how the counseling will work with a couple like this. And you have that form, I believe. We provided it to you. So that will help in the future to ensure that there aren't other misunderstandings in this area. But it's very important that they work together and use information to be able to work through. And I'm not a therapist, so I won't use the lingo correctly, but it's very important to be able to use all of the tools, including the testing that was done, to work through these very complicated issues. And so, like I said, Ms. Johnson is regretful, but she has taken steps to make sure that in the future these misunderstandings don't occur. And in a, so given that and given her experience level, I would suggest that a non-disciplinary consent agreement would be appropriate in this particular case. Thank you.
Thank you. Do board members have any questions?
A couple questions. I appreciate the clarification this morning and the sense of responsibility. That eliminated a few questions I had, so I do appreciate that. Ms. Johnson, I think the overwhelming feeling in reading this is just the clients did not understand. It was presented in one way, and we have to remember that we want to make sure our clients are fully aware of how the process works. You have an informed consent that appears, or this what you were using, appears to be kind of more of a signature page. Would you agree with that? You have one informed consent. It has like three paragraphs on it,
right,
and that appears to okay. And that has very little information about what to expect. And then we have a office policy page that kind of maybe explains, but still doesn't go into anything about how couples therapy works. Have you adjusted? I mean, I.
Oh, you mean the couples therapy?
Yes, like I'm hearing you're explaining a relational questionnaire, but I don't really see that you're explaining how couples works, how couples therapy works, and the limits to confidentiality, and how, if at all, we're going to use individual sessions during that modality. Have you adjusted any of that to make it very clear to your couples how this works when we work as a group like that?
Well, in that first session, I usually explain how that beginning process will work. Mm-hmm. I usually have a similar explanation.
Okay.
And I always, you know, share that. I don't have them sign anything, and so I guess that's the missing part. But I will be more clear about that in the future, just so that everybody's – I mean, this has never happened before, so I definitely want to make this change if it was unclear in any circumstance.
I think you're onto something with that, only because it feels like even though your, you know, testament today is that you explain it very well, if we have our clients that don't understand, then we are walking into a process that we're not aligned.
So I guess that is one positive addition that I will use going forward.
That would be great. With that, I have noticed that in your progress notes, when you have worked with the individual, you actually diagnose the individual. Do you see this as being another clear indicator that this is an individual treatment versus a couple modality?
Well, what I see the individual person, I have to look at them, you know, I see them individually. So insurance, you know, with the level of stress and the appropriateness of the
okay, so if we diagnose a client with an individual diagnosis, it would indicate you're going to treat that diagnosis.
For the adjustment, yeah.
Right, so would it...
So the adjustment would, right, so that the treatment plan then is focused on addressing each of those problems that have come up.
Right. So when I hear you say each of those problems, again, we indicate individual treatment, which would indicate a level of individual confidentiality and privacy.
Okay. Well, so that's a little bit unclear. I guess I don't know how to exactly answer that, because when the individuals come in with a, you know, with a shared problem and each has a high level of stress and they're both suffering, then, you know, you look at what's in front of you, and that's how to make these stressors decrease. And then that individual session just has to happen. So in the past, that's how I've done it, you know, to look at the problems that each one has. I mean, it's not perfect. But if that needs to be, you know, that whole kind of that whole way of looking at how you, you know, diagnose or, submit to insurance or not submit to insurance. That is kind of not always simple.
I would propose looking at that,
yeah.
That when we send a message to clients that we have individually diagnosed them with something, it does send a message of that I'm going to treat that with you and I'm going to treat that with you. That message just comes inherently with that. I would just propose looking at that so that we don't – this case feels like a lot of misinterpretation of what is being done in the room, in the therapy. And so all of the steps that we can take to mitigate that would probably help reduce our risk of this happening in the future. I think that'll cover it for me. Thank you.
Good morning. I just wonder, in this situation, I wonder if it was a consideration to maybe have somebody else do the individual work with the two clients while you did the couple work with the two clients. Was that
only see the individual once, and then we just do couple after that.
The reason I'm asking the question is because it sounds like you have two distinct diagnoses, and it seems like there are two specific arenas of treatment that are necessary, but they're lumped together. And it may be, I don't know, I wasn't there, so I don't know. But I wonder if having so much going on was too much for the clients.
Possibility.
Thank you.
Are there any additional questions from board members? All right, this is our time to talk amongst ourselves. We ask that you not interrupt. I'm sorry. It was your chance to address us earlier. This would be our time to discuss amongst ourselves, unless there's anything new that you had to add. Again, we have all the materials. But as a complainant, was there something new to add?
Yes.
Right, Mr. Ryan, I'd ask that you and your client take your seat. And as the complainant, I'll refer to you as your initials, AS, if you want to come forward.
If necessary, can we respond?
Yes, if I think it's necessary, Mr. Ryan, absolutely.
Thank you very much. I didn't realize that I would go first and then I wouldn't be able to answer. Appreciate your questions. Thank you. And I don't know what's on your report because I don't get to see it. My main concern is the insensitivity that was shown. We had one initial session, we were given scorecards?
Relationship.
Assessment.
The assessment. We were given the assessment, we sent them back. We then each had our own. So in answer to your question, sir, it wasn't really too much for us. It was part of the process for us that we met once. We each met individually, and then we were going to go forward. So we thought that was part of the process. We took that in as that the way it would go. So we didn't have basically any individual work. Ms. Bailey, I think you referenced that. So there wasn't any individual work. And I also would just want to say that my wife and I don't do angry outbursts and strong emotions to someone that we don't know. If I sat down with you in two sessions, basically what happened was we were so blown away we didn't know what to say. And at the end of the going through the assessment, she gave us five choices. And that might be in, please tell me if that's in your report already. You have that, so you know what those choices were. And that was like, okay, we're blown away twice. So that's all I wanted to say about that. At the minimum, I believe Dr. Johnson should have some sort of sensitivity training to be able to be aware, to see visually in the room that this is not happening the way she thought it would go. Thank you for your time. Any questions?
Are there any questions for the complainant? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Ryan, I don't see a need to readdress, but if you do, I'll give you a minute.
Thank you, and we'll come back up. Thank you, and I don't need more than a minute. First of all, we appreciate the recommendations that were given, and those will be incorporated, most definitely, what you suggested. Certainly, people perceive things differently. Again, Ms. Johnson feels regret that there was misunderstanding in this situation, and we're not here to argue whether or not there were angry outbursts. What we're trying to do is address for the future to ensure that there isn't, a replication of what occurred here. Thank you.
This will be our time to talk amongst ourselves now. And
I think if there, as I was reading this and as I hear today, I think I'd be going a little bit of a different direction if there was more diligence to adhering to Arizona's minimum practice standards and what's expected here. So I'm just being open that is guiding my decision in this way today because that was lacking. So kind of just wanted to say that out loud. It does appear from, because of that, it does appear from the paperwork that, you know, the biggest piece for me here is just the presentation of what we're doing together and making sure that clients are fully informed and aware and we're in agreement. And spending the extra time to make sure that we're, you know, that we have that in place. We can say all day long what we've talked to them about, but if we don't have anything that indicates an agreement, we're just out of luck, you know, on being able to support what we feel was agreed on in the session. And so it does appear to me that because of the way the documentation is laid out, the way the diagnosis is laid out and probably billed, that it looks like we would have a message, underlying message of some confidences, and that was broken. So I do find for the violations, I think the documentation stuff is a given. You know, we do see that, and those have been rectified, but I'm not sure if everything has been, right? But there has been some effort on that. But I do think that the findings did lead us in a way to find for the violations.
And I just want to add, for the record, and I think this goes to exactly where you were going, there just needs to be a common thread when you're working with a system, couple, family, from day one. This is who my client is. This is what we're all agreeing to.
Right.
This is our approach and understanding. And as Doc mentioned, here are the additional resources that are addressing any individual concerns or other concerns. So I agree, that just was not clear.
Well, we do have, you know, when we work with couples, I mean, we have a Z code, you know, that we use working with couples for the reason of staying out of the lane of individually diagnosing. In this case, they're both diagnosed with an adjustment disorder, but what if that was different? You know, I'm going to treat anxiety for one partner and depression for another partner, but, you know, when we diagnose them with a relational distress, we can include those factors until they warrant the level of individual treatment, which is stuck what you were talking about. So.
And unfortunately, and we know as MFTs, we live in an individualized world, and so unfortunately, regardless of how your system is set up, your billing and insurance companies are set up, that doesn't mean you shift to individual diagnoses and forms to accommodate that. You've got to be true to the clinical.
Totally agree.
I didn't ask the licensee a question that I intended to ask, which was how much training had she had in the use of the instrument and how much training in assessment of relationships in general. It feels like that was lacking, but I think that this exercise will probably give some impetus to getting training in some modality that a licensee is going to use.
And to piggyback, I think it's recent and relevant training, because I know there was some previous training that was mentioned in there. But then it's also the critical thinking of how do you incorporate that with the Board of Behavioral Health Examiners. You know, how do you meet all of those standards?
Just one thing I wanted to piggyback off what Dr. Bailey was recommending is definitely finding a way to clearly delineate the difference between providing individual and couples. And what kind of, you know, got my attention was the fact that there's two different client intake questionnaires. And when an individual is being asked these individual questions about their psychiatric history and their treatment, it's hard to determine, well, what are you treating, man? Are you treating the couple or are you treating these individual issues and concerns that are being presented? So just, you know, really looking at those practices. And I'm not an LMFT, but I'm sure there's a couples intake questionnaire somewhere that will make it better understood that the couple is the focal point and not the individual. So I just wanted to comment on that.
And because of service here on the board and hearing cases like this again and again, where I once thought that an LCSW could do anything, I much more appropriately respect the work of the LMFTs.
Any comments contrary? Otherwise, I'll move forward, but I would welcome any. I move that we find for the violations of the failure to maintain confidentiality, ARS 3232-5116-K, as it responds to the NASW Code of Ethics 1.07, Privacy and Confidentiality. And for the documentation deficiencies, ARS 3232-5116-P, as it relates to R461101 Treatment Plan 1102. Sorry, consent for treatment, 1102 treatment plan, 1103 client record, and 1106 telepractice.
Is there a second?
Coonrod, I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
My thoughts were a year probation. To have a practice monitor / supervisor. I didn't think that it warranted, you know, both, but the responsibilities I would like for, you know, that person to take on for maybe 6 months. I think this could probably be resolved with some intensive attention to just the practice standards. So the practice monitor / supervisor is just looking at all the documentation. Also, just how the documentation responds to couples work, if that's going to be the continued population we continue to work with, which could also, I don't know if she does any family, but, you know, it could overlap into family work. I thought staying out of trouble or any kind of equivalency would address the documentation issues. Always good for us to be up on that. With hopes of maybe also, because of today, asking more Arizona-specific rules. That would be something that's our responsibility when we go into continuing education. So I'm just saying that out loud. That would be a great opportunity to ask those types of questions. And then lastly, just 6 units and couples work with the same type of hope that as we're sitting in a training that we ask questions of how do we diagnose a couple, since we've talked about that today, and how do we actually use assessments, you know, just how are we using assessments, more specific questions on how that can be utilized in the couples.
Was We've got six continuing education. Read back what you captured.
I do have a question. So with the practice monitor and clinical supervisor, usually those are separate.
Mm-hmm.
Can I suggest that that the order include clinical supervision, and we'll just beef up the template to include that they'll have an audit of...
Oh, that'd be great. I just didn't want two separate providers. Absolutely.
Thank you. And you said for 6 months?
For the supervision?
Yeah.
And for the frequency?
One time a month.
So we would be offering the licensee a consent agreement for 12 months. She would be required to have clinical supervision once monthly for a minimum of 6 months. The clinical supervision will include a review of the Arizona Board rules and statutes, documentation review of her current practice and moving forward, as well as information in regards to clients that she's providing couples and or family therapy with. She would also be required to take continuing education for 6 contact hours in staying out of trouble or equivalent, as well as 6 contact hours in couples therapy. And if not signed, she'd be invited to a formal interview, and if not accepted, remanded to a formal hearing. Is that your motion?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Trotter, second.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Cassandra Parr.
Aye.
Mark Shen.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Thank you both for being here. Thank you to the complainant for being here. Have a good day. This will conclude that matter.
Thank you.
We could take a short break. It is 10:03. Let's take 10. Kim, mic on. All right. We're coming back to order at 10:13. And going to agenda item 7E, Corinne Harper. Is the complainant here? Do you wish to address the board? We will. I just need to know if you wanted to address the board. Okay. Why don't you come forward? All right. And Ms. Harper, just so you're aware, the way that this works is we hear a brief summary from board staff. And then if the complainant wishes to address us, she will have the opportunity to, and then you and your counsel will have an opportunity to address us after that. Let's start with a brief summary from board staff.
Yes. Madam Chair, members of the board, so before I proceed to the analysis, I just kind of want to give you a brief overview. Ms. Harper has been licensed since 1999. She actually has closed her practice as of July 1st. Of this year. She did reach out to the board with her attorney that she would like to voluntarily surrender her license. With that said, a voluntary surrender of a license for our board is considered a revocation, which is pretty harsh compared to the conduct that you're going to hear about in the analysis. So I'll repeat this when we're all done, when you all are having a conversation. But if you do decide to find the violations that board staff is recommending, then after those violations are found, then I would ask that you consider offering her a consent agreement for what we call a not to renew. Basically, what that means is her license would go to suspended, and then in January of 23, when her license expires, it would just expire. So she wouldn't be able to practice under her license, but it wouldn't be considered a revocation. If the board were to order stipulations, it would be difficult for her to do since she's no longer practicing. And again, it would be likely that you'll want me to repeat this when we're all done. So.
Thank you.
Following review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. ARS 32-3251-16M, engaging or offering to engage as a licensee in activities that are not congruent with a licensee's professional education, training, or experience. This recommendation is based on the following. From 12-17 to 5-18 and from 8-20 to 5-21, client received behavioral health services from licensee. A letter dated 12-7-20 from licensee was provided to client's attorney, which included the following opinions and recommendations. Client was hoping to help stabilize the situation which complainant was broadcasting details of their marital problems to their children, both partners' extended families, neighbors, church community, and later even strangers. Client's intent was to help comfort and calm down complainant's emotions with the understanding that any legal agreement, such as a legal separation, was only a temporary arrangement.
In early October, the situation felt more tenuous to client, and he became distraught. Complainant asked client to go with her to briefly sign the remaining document as part of the legal separation process. Client was told that this was a simple formality, did not change anything, and if not signed that day, a fine would be incurred. Client trusted that what complainant told him. Client signed the paperwork without reading it. To client's shock and horror, the document he signed was not a simple formality related to the already existing separation. Client blindly signed the paperwork. It appeared he was likely manipulated into signing. No clear-thinking person who understood a legal process would have done such a thing. I strongly recommend that this situation be reevaluated for equity. Licensee recommends that client be granted formal visitation rights with his children. Client has always been a dedicated and loving father. It is in the best interest of the children that client has regular in-person contact with them. Licensee recommends that client and complainant attend parenting classes. The children may experience permanent issues if this matter of visitation is not corrected. It is my professional opinion that the mental health issues of both parents play a significant role in how these transactions occur. Licensee, you represented the following regarding the 12-7-20 letter. Client's attorney requested a letter from licensee to assist in getting the legal document overturned. Licensee was shocked to learn her letter had upset the complainant. Licensee's letter consisted of direct statements and or comments from client. Licensee was concerned that refusing to write the letter might further destabilize client's mental status. Licensee confirmed she never had any contact with complainant or complainant's children. Licensee understands she is not in a professional capacity to assess or evaluate parenting time. Licensee never asserted any diagnosis of complainant in her letter. It is concerning that licensee chose to affirmatively prepare a letter that was to be used in a court proceeding when she had no legal obligation to do so. It is highly concerning that in this letter, licensee provided opinions and recommendations involving complainant and the children, despite having never met, communicated with, or provided services to them. Additionally, following review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violations. ARS 3232516P, failing to conform to minimum practice standards as developed by the board as it relates to the consent to treat, treatment plan, client records, and telepractice. This recommendation is based on the following. A review of the clinical records for client KE and JE revealed the following documentation deficiencies. The consent for treatments for KE and JE were missing required elements. Client's two treatment plans were missing required elements. The clinical records for KE and JE were missing required telepractice elements. And the progress notes for KE and JE were missing required elements. Licensee represented the following regarding her documentation deficiencies. Licensee ensured her documentation was in compliance with the board rules by speaking with other therapists and with regular continued education. An audit of licensee's other client files would reveal similar deficiencies. Licensee reviewed relevant statutes but misunderstood how these elements should be applied to her documentation. Licensee used another office's form because she thought it covered everything. It is concerning that licensee's records contain the above-referenced documentation deficiencies despite being independently licensed and having been in private practice for over two decades. And that's all I have unless you have any questions for me.
Are there questions from board members? Is the complainant you wish to address us? All right. Would you introduce yourself for the record, and then you have up to 5 minutes to do so.
Thank you. My name is Emily Ellsworth. When my husband sought formal therapy from Ms. Harper for the second time in August 2020, he put his trust in her due to their therapist-client history. He was struggling with long-standing depression that was exacerbated by the consequences of his infidelity. Infidelity that by its unique nature affected his relationships with nearly everyone of importance in his life. Feeling very alone in the world, my husband came to rely heavily on Ms. Harper. Through the months of therapy after our separation, he came to trust her advice and felt that she had his best interests at heart. Due to the nature of his relationship with Ms. Harper, my husband became convinced that she knew the course of action he should take. Though we had previously come to an amicable agreement, at her encouragement, he sought an attorney and filed to have our previously negotiated settlement set aside. Ms. Harper wrote a letter to be included with a legal petition that had the potential to significantly alter my financial future, the custody arrangement of our children, and my relationship with my husband and father of my children. Ms. Harper neglected to state in the letter provided to the judge that she was also treating my husband's brother and his wife, who my husband had recently ended an affair with. This was a direct conflict of interest. Though I was never her client, and in fact she did not know me at all, Ms. Harper cast aspersions on my character and diagnosed me with erratic behaviors and mental health issues, and included this in her letter to the judge. Though my husband knows my character, Ms. Harper was able to convince him that I was poisoning our children and keeping them from him. She convinced him that I had somehow tricked him into signing a legal document without his understanding. Though I had left the door open for further negotiation of our financial and custody settlements, Ms. Harper felt my husband was making a mistake if he did not attempt to have our settlement thrown out completely and was instrumental in convincing my husband that this was the best course of action. The therapist holds inherently the greater power and influence as compared to the people they help. Ms. Harper exceeded her scope of practice when she urged my husband to seek an attorney and set aside the settlement he and I had negotiated and agreed upon. As my husband and I have maintained an amicable relationship throughout the divorce proceedings and to this day, we chose to stop the legal proceedings and renegotiate the terms of our settlement privately. Though I do not have any hard feelings toward my husband, I suffered significant emotional trauma and financial loss due to Ms. Harper's letter and her interference in our divorce proceedings. To my understanding, Ms. Harper did not act in accordance with the ACA Code of Ethics when she treated three of the four persons involved in the affair and targeted the only person she was not treating. She did not act in accordance with the ACA Code of Ethics when she diagnosed me with erratic behaviors and mental health issues and documented this in her letter to the judge. Thank you.
Do board members have any questions for the complainant? Also, we'd ask you to take your seat. Thank you for being here. And Mr. Gardner, if you could come forward, please. Please introduce yourself and your client who's appearing telephonically, and then you have up to 5 minutes to address.
Thank you. Good morning, board members. My name is Brad Gardner. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Udall Shumway and Mesa. My client has decided to give up her practice. That was already in progress at or about the time she actually received this complaint. This is something that she's been planning for some time. I think the only point I really have right now is to make sure that you're aware she's not doing this because of the complaint. She has a lot of opportunities. Right now she's doing volunteer work for her church in another state. But she wanted to go ahead and respond. But she is willing to go ahead and agree to a suspension, which will basically be permanent because she's not going to apply to get her license back because of all the other opportunities she has, including spending time with the grandkids. So she has that going on, the volunteer work. She doesn't intend to practice again, so I think this is probably a good resolution for everybody. And that's all I have, unless you have any questions.
Ms. Harper, is there anything you'd like to add?
No.
Do board members have any questions for the licensee?
No.
All right. This will be our time to talk amongst ourselves. We ask that you not interrupt.
Thank you.
Ms. Parr, I believe this was yours to leave.
Yes, it was. So I've obviously reviewed all of the documents and I had so many questions originally. Part of it, too, for me is that even understanding that she's closed her practice, this still happened while she was practicing. That really didn't match for me. Regarding treating, I had a lot of concerns about offering an opinion that was unwarranted and sought after as well. Even making comments regarding the children and regarding the wife without ever seeing them within her practice. I had a couple of concerns. With that being said, I do agree with board findings. But I wanted to bounce this off of my peers to see if anybody else can add
an agreement.
I agree. I had the same concerns.
Okay. So I would like to make a motion to move in the violations found, which are ARS 32-3251-16M. Engaging or offering to engage as a licensee in activities that are not congruent with the licensee's professional education, training, or experience, as well as ARS 32-3251-16 documentation deficiencies.
And for the record, can we state for R46, 1101, 1102, 1103, and 1106?
Yes.
That's your motion, Ms. Park?
Yes.
Is there a second?
Bailey, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Ms. Zavala, can I ask a clarifying question as we go into next steps? Given what you said about offering the not to renew instead of accepting or the voluntary surrender, so she doesn't renew but decides in 5 years she's done hanging out with the grandkids and volunteering and wants to practice again in Arizona, where does that leave us?
So what that would mean is, as you are correct, the consent agreement will be a not to renew, and we put the 5 years in there. So in 5 years, if she decided she wanted to reapply, she could reapply. But at that time, she would, you know, this complaint could come back or anything else that's transpired in the last 5 years for the board's review.
Could we make that an automatically comes back if she should reapply?
I don't think so. I mean, she's going to have to mark yes on her background question. You know, I just don't see, this is something that we do, not often, but we do it frequently. I mean, if she were going to close down her practice, you all would find these violations, and then you would order her to, you know, possibly get a practice monitor to do CEUs, and being that she's not practicing anymore, this really is a viable solution for really both parties. But if it were to come back, that would be part of the background that we would review. And I'm not, in my 11 years, I have never seen anybody come back after signing a not to renew. It's a big decision for them to make that kind of a decision.
I want to make sure it would be memorialized, and then she would have to report it just like.
Right. And just to be clear, because you found the violations, this is a public record. So it's going to get reported to the National Data Bank. It'll look just like a regular consent agreement. She just won't be required to do anything stipulation-wise.
Anybody else have any questions? Barb, do you want to?
Yes.
Before we're talking?
Yes. Tell me if this is how it is worded. To make a motion to accept the consent or to make a consent agreement?
Actually, we would make a motion to offer a consent agreement to not renew. And if not signed, remand to a formal hearing.
Yes. That is my motion.
Is there a second?
Second, Trotter.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Cassandra Parr.
Aye.
Mark Shin.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Motion carries. Ms. Harper, thank you for appearing telephonically. Best of luck to you. Thank you, Mr. Gardner, and thank you, Ms. Ellsworth, for being here.
Thank you.
And that will bring us to 7I and J. Ms. McHugh, is the complainant present for that matter? Do you wish to address the board? Okay. Perfect. I'll have you sit tight, and we'll see if there's questions. Is the licensee and her attorney present? They were not going to appear telephonically, correct?
Correct.
All right. Can we hear a brief summary from board staff?
Madam Chair, members of the board, so this is two complaints with two separate complainants in regards to licensee. This matter is before you today to accept the proposed signed consent agreement for the voluntary surrender of the professional's license. On 8-20-21, the board received a complaint of unprofessional conduct alleging licensee was in a relationship with a former client. On 8-24-21, the board received another complaint of unprofessional conduct alleging the same. Due to the egregiousness of the complaint, I had reached out to the licensee, and after a discussion, I do have attachment number 3, which is a signed consent agreement for having a sexual relationship with a former client. And that's all I have. Do you have any questions?
Any questions for myself? Does anybody have any questions for either of the complainants? Would we like to hear from them? I do want to thank you for reporting. It's important that we're holding our colleagues accountable. So thank you both. And this will move us into our deliberations. And Mr. Charles, I believe
this. Yes, and I apologize if it's clunky as I go through it. It's my first to do. But as I read through this, if there's a consent agreement at this point, I would, after reviewing everything, I would move to accept that. Is there anything that I'm missing here?
First need to consolidate the cases. Can we do that in one motion?
Oh, I would prefer two separate.
Okay. first would be to move to consolidate.
Not to consolidate, right?
To consolidate. So we have two complaints alleging the same conduct. So
gotcha. Okay, so then I would move that we would consolidate.
Is there a second?
Our second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And then it would be a motion to accept the proposed signed consent agreement.
And then I would move that we accept the proposed signed consent agreement.
Is there a second?
Bailey, second.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Cassandra Parr.
Aye.
Mark Shin.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Carries. Thank you. Thank you both for being here. This will conclude that matter, or those matters. Now we will go to 7P, Judith Pareda. Is the complainant here for that matter? Is the licensee present? All right, we will hear a brief summary from board staff.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is also before you today to consider accepting the voluntary surrender of the professional's license. On 8/19/21, the board received a complaint of unprofessional conduct alleging licensee had a sexual relationship with a former client. Based on a conversation with the licensee, attachment number 2 is a consent agreement for your review with a V violation of a sexual relationship with a former client.
Any questions for Ms. Zavala? I believe this
was. Well, given pretty much evidence represented, I motion that we accept the consent agreement executed by the licensee.
There a second?
Shen, second.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Cassandra Parr.
Aye.
Mark Shen.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Thank you to Ms. Zavala and board staff for moving quickly on those egregious complaints and being able to reach those agreements. We will go to 7H, Lindsay Jones. Good morning, Mr. Carey. Do you want to introduce yourself for the record?
Counsel for Ms. Jones. She's not present. I'm here for questions, but more of just observing.
Thank you. Brief summary from board staff.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this matter is before you to consider accepting a proposed signed consent agreement for the voluntary surrender of the professional's license. On 8/23/21, the board received a complaint of unprofessional conduct alleging licensee was having a sexual relationship with a client. If you see on attachment 2, we do have a proposed consent agreement for the member's review in regards to the licensee admitting to having a sexual relationship with a former client. And that's all I have, unless you have any questions for me.
Any questions, board members? Mr. Carey, did you want to add anything?
Chair, I'll waive.
Any questions for Mr. Carey? We are time to discuss amongst ourselves. Dr. Bailey, I believe this is
here. Actually, I don't believe I assigned anybody because we just put it on the agenda a couple days ago.
I just made that up. I apologize. Not is there a motion to it?
Yeah, I would move that we accept the proposed consent agreement for the surrender of the license.
Is there a second?
Second, Trotter.
Roll call.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Cassandra Parr.
Aye.
Mark Shin.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you for being here, Mr.
Thank you.
C, Ms. Fox. And is the licensee present? All right. We will hear a brief summary from board staff then.
Madam Chair, is it okay if we just go ahead and call all four of these matters? I don't believe that anybody's in attendance and the information is all the same. I just think it might be easier.
Sure. So this would be, bear with me, 7C, Ms. Fox, 7D, Mr. Gillum, 7K, Ms. McQuaid, and 7M, Ms. Moore. Is that correct?
Correct.
Anybody here on those matters? All right. A brief summary from board staff has the same report, correct?
Yes. Madam Chair, members of the board, I do want to let you know that we did upload this morning to the portal some additional information that we received from the Fox. It doesn't appear to make a difference based on the fact that these four individuals we're bringing to you today to see if the board members will consider opening up a complaint. If you recall, a month or two ago, we opened up a complaint on Ms. Vanzolo, who is an associate-level licensee who owns and operates her own agency and provides psychotherapy without direct supervision. And so that complaint is being reviewed right now. But these four individuals are four clinical supervisors that submitted documentation on her application for an independently-level license who works with her, which would be a conflict of interest. And not permittable pursuant to our rules. So we're just asking today to open up a complaint on these four.
And we would need a motion for each one separately to open the complaint.
That is correct. Okay.
Are there any questions for Ms. Zavala?
Okay. So in regard to Ms. Fox, I make a motion that we open a complaint based on the information.
Is there a second?
Or a second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
For Mr. Gillum, I move we open a complaint.
Is there a second?
Bailey, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Ms. McQuaid, I also make a motion that we open a complaint in her case.
Is there a second?
Bailey, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
And for Ms. Moore, I make a motion that we open a complaint.
Bailey, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you. Yeah, you gave me the easy one. Thank you.
We will go to 7B. Mr. Brenningstein is representing. And if you would please introduce yourselves for the record.
Yes, good morning. Mandy Carvis of Wickersmith, appearing on behalf of and with my client, Chuck Brenningstein.
And I'm Chuck Brenningstein.
Ms. Zavala, is there a brief summary? Sorry.
Madam Chair, members of the board, the purpose that I put this on the agenda this month was just a concern at an administrative level. This was originally a self-report that took place in February of 2021. Upon receiving the police reports in July of 21, board staff observed licensee representative police officer here that he had relapsed after being clean for 8 months. A licensee never reported this relapse in 2020. This conduct was very similar to what board staff had observed in 2006. Based on that information, we brought it to the board at the 7/16/21 board meeting. And at that time, the board ordered a substance abuse evaluation to be done within 60 days. I believe that due date is the 16th or the 17th of this month. In addition to that, they also offered an ICE, an interim consent agreement, which hasn't been signed. I brought it back really just as an administrative and my concern of protecting the public because as of this week, actually yesterday, we just received a request for an approval for an addictionologist to be done that's tentatively scheduled, I believe, for September 30th, which is past the due date. You know, we often will allow for that, but we typically will get a request for an extension, and we basically hadn't heard anything in about 45 days, so it was a little bit concerning. So I asked for the board to, you know, take into consideration. We do have some supplemental information that was just uploaded this morning. Yesterday, we did receive an addictionologist information. I sent it out to Mr. Szymanski, who, based on my conversation with him, was able to approve it quickly so that we can kind of go through this process. This morning, we received some character letters as well from a colleague and the current employer. But again, I still have concerns. What was in this licensee system at the time to me is concerning, being that the evaluation won't be done until the 30th, and then the remaining investigation will have to take place. It could be a couple of months before they come back. I ask that maybe the board members consider ordering a 10-panel hair follicle test that would be done in the next 10 days. Or 7 days, so that we can just ensure that there's nothing in the system at this time, so we can wait for that evaluation to come back. And that's all I have.
Any questions for Ms. Zavala? You have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you. The board is well up to speed as to where things stand now. Mr. Fenningstein did have some financial issues that were preventing him from identifying and locating someone that would meet the board's requirements in order to undergo the evaluation. He has now located someone, Dr. Schulte, who I know the board is familiar with, that has been approved, and the evaluation is scheduled for 9:30, so that will go forward as scheduled. Mr. Fenningstein is willing to abide by whatever recommendations this board would make. The primary reason that the offered interim consent agreement was not accepted was because that would not allow him to practice at all during that period of time until he could prove to the board that he could do so safely. He is willing to comply with whatever the board would like him to do in terms of testing or anything that is recommended by the evaluator. Mr. Fenningstein did self-report the DUI. It's not that he was not trying to be forthcoming with the board. He did, and again, not obviously trying to minimize or make excuses, he was undergoing some significant health problems that he's since had surgery for, as I indicated to this board before. The relapse was pain-driven. He is sober. He is only taking medications as they are prescribed by his physicians. He's working. That is helping with his sobriety. His employer, who submitted a letter, is aware of the situation. And we know that this and other boards obviously do have programs in place for impaired professionals who can, with board monitoring, appropriately and safely practice. And the fact that Mr. Fenningstein does have that background, that he himself has struggled with addiction, has been something that has been very helpful to his clients, and he's able to serve the public in that capacity. We believe he can do so safely, and he's happy to answer any questions that you have, but again, we are looking for a pathway that would allow him to continue to practice in a way that also made the board feel as if they were doing their due diligence in terms of protecting the safety of the public. We believe he is safe to practice at this time. He's actively engaged in meetings and other things to maintain his sobriety. And again, he's happy to answer any questions that you have, and he will obviously fulfill the current appointment with Dr. Schulte for the 30th, and will follow any recommendations that Dr. Schulte makes that are not already part of his current personal practice with respect to maintaining sobriety. Thank you.
Any questions from board members? Time to talk amongst ourselves.
Can I say anything?
Yes, if you wish to address the board.
Yeah, just some, I mean, this is really disappointing and upsetting to me. So I have been continuously sober for 12 years. And so these two relapses or lapses, they've been directly related to my pain. So I suffer chronic pain and have for about 25 years. I'm a yoga instructor, Tai Chi instructor, and meditation instructor, so I've been using integrative holistic modalities to deal with pain, and I teach clients how to do that because many of them suffer with the same thing I do. And so it's very challenging at times to deal with that without using. So some things that I've done that just may be useful for your deliberation is I went to a pain management doctor about a year and a half ago. So he's been treating me, but I never asked for pills. So, like, you know, epidurals and shots and stuff like that. So I did get some tramadol, like about a week before my operation, right, because I was just in so much pain. And so when I found these pills, there's some things in the report I have to say, honestly, I was not in the best shape when I got questioned, and I remember things differently as far as what I thought I said, but I know that I was impaired, so it was confusing to me, my memory of this, and so there were some things that were pretty big, like I don't remember telling the officer that I used fentanyl. What I remember, and anything's possible because I was impaired, but what I remember is saying that I found what I thought was OxyContin, because I had had that before, and sometimes I would just put some away, and it was so strong, I thought it was fentanyl. I've taken fentanyl like maybe once in my life, and I know it was a lot stronger than the Oxy. So there are a number of things like that. I don't have to get into them, but there are a number of things like that. Like I said, I don't remember this, I said that I had been coming home from a therapy session. I thought what I said was I did a lot of therapy in Scottsdale, which I've been working in Scottsdale for. So, I just want to let you know I was confused, and I remember waking up to the police officer, and so I just want to mention that, and I just want to be... One thing that I've learned in recovery is I have a really strong spiritual connection, a good social support system. I've been going to 5 to 7 meetings a day, talking to my sponsor 3 to 5 times a week. And, you know, people assume that if you're doing all the right things, you won't relapse or lapse. And I'm blessed that I got a job because I didn't work for 6 months in the pandemic and probably applied for 100 jobs. Finally got a job, and then I couldn't keep it because of my back. And then, so it was like a perfect storm. I don't want it to sound like a country song, but it was a perfect storm. So, like, when I saw those pills...
And I hate to interrupt, but I'm going to have to ask you to wrap it up.
I will.
You have to remember why it was agendized this time versus when in July, and I know you did not appear, so we weren't able to hear from you then.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's on the agenda for a limited purpose today.
So I just wanted to say the reason I waited so long is I thought the board, and I talked to the attorney about this, that you would give me the recommendation. It said I needed approval, so I figured you had a list, and I asked her to ask you, and then the date was moved up. So it wasn't negligence or irresponsibility. So I just want to make that clear. So, I'll leave it at that. I've got other stuff I'd like to say, but I will respect.
Thank you. This will be our time to talk amongst ourselves. And again, just a reminder of Ms. Zavala's presentation and why this is on the agenda. Dr. Bailey, I'm not making it up this time.
No, you're good. Mm-hmm. It's all good. I think I just kind of want to say I'm feeling most concerned right now this morning with the comment of I didn't want to sign the ICA so that I could keep working. That really bothers me. So we had an ICA for a reason. I'm prepared to suggest that we reoffer that in light of just kind of the time that's gone by. And we have testament this morning, but if it's all good, then the screening will come back negative, so I do think that the hair follicle screen would be appropriate considering where we're at today.
And order it to be done within the next 7
days. Correct.
Well, is there anything else necessary for that?
I think I just want clarity. Because I think when we heard this matter a couple months ago, I think there might have been a little, there was a lot of discussion and maybe a little bit of confusion. Typically, when we offer an ICA, we give them a limited amount of time to sign it. And then if they don't sign it, we consider it a remand to a formal hearing. It then pretty much becomes, you know, an emergency kind of type situation. When that all took place a couple months ago, we did offer the ICA. We didn't give a time limit on it, and we also didn't remand it to a formal hearing. I think at the time, so I guess what I want to go back to you, Dr. Bailey, and just to make sure that I'm understanding, I know that I heard you say we want to issue an order for 10 panel follicle tests to be done within 7 days, and that definitely will, because if it does come up positive, we can have a special board meeting. But in addition to that, are you also saying that you want to offer an interim consent agreement that should be signed within a time period, and if not signed, then remand to a formal hearing?
Absolutely, yes. Thank you.
Could we make
and the time frame that would be appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, at ICAs, usually the turnarounds are really quick on them because it usually means that somebody's not safe to practice. So that would be, you know, up to you whether you wanted to give them a couple of weeks to sign it, 30 days to sign it, however you want to do that. But I would ask that those motions are separated.
Okay. So I'm first going to move that we offer the ICA. And if not signed within 14 days, remanded to a formal hearing.
Is there a second?
Chen, second.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Cassandra Parr.
Aye.
Mark Shen.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
And then I also move that we order the hair follicle screen to be completed within 7 days.
I have a question, because I know there was some discussion about how much longer it's going to take for the other test. What's the turnaround time for a hair follicle?
We usually get it within 48 hours.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Sorry. Thank you.
Is there a second?
Second, Trotter.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you
for being here.
Thank you.
And we will go to 7L, Brian Merrill. Is the complainant for this matter, Ms. Smith, present? Do you wish to address the board?
Well, Madam Chair, this matter has been pulled.
Oh, that's correct. So, it was pulled from the consent agenda originally. So if you will come forward, please. And then Ms. Carvis is here on behalf of the licensee, who we are going to get on the phone. Sorry, Mr. Valle.
Well, that's okay.
I have that notice. Didn't read it.
This is Dr. Merrill.
Hello, this is Patricia, the board's chairperson.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. We are getting ready to hear your matter. Your attorney is present. The complainant is present. And so what we will do is first hear a brief summary from board staff, and then the complainant will have a chance to address us, and then you and your attorney will have a chance to address us as well. So if you could sit tight and mute your phone, we would appreciate that.
Okay.
All right. Ms. Bella?
Madam Chair, members of the board, this board staff is recommending a dismissal. This would have been on the consent agenda, but before the agenda was formalized, the complainant indicated that they wanted it to be heard by the entire board. So I have nothing to add other than board staff is recommending a dismissal.
Any questions for Ms. Zavala from board members? You would have up to 5 minutes to address the board. We do have all of the materials in the matter and then the board staff's recommendation that you can address the board if there's other things you'd like us to consider.
I just would like it to be known that my son is not yet in my understanding that it's the professional's duty to keep their records. My understanding, and it was said under oath that he got the records. That's not right, and it's not right to have families. It's not right to happen to anybody. That is a legal matter. That is their records, there to be. And if you burnt them in any or destroyed them or got rid of them in any manner, that's wrong. And it is his duty. And I like it to be heard that it's not right for that to happen to anybody or anybody's family. And I believe he did wrong.
Board members had any questions for the complainant? I would ask that you take your seat. And Ms. Carvis, if you want to come forward. Yourself for the record, please.
Yes. Mandy Carvis of Wicker Smith appearing on behalf of my client, Dr. Merrill, who is also present telephonically. I know the board has reviewed all of the materials and understands the nature of the situation with respect to the records destruction, and we agree, obviously, with the board's staff's recommendation of dismissal. If anyone has any questions for Dr. Merrill or myself, we're happy to address them. But
Dr. Merrill, is there anything you would like to add?
Not at this time. I'm willing to answer any questions that the board would have.
Thank you. Do board members have any questions? Our time to discuss amongst ourselves. We ask that you not interrupt.
It was. This one was pretty clear to me after reviewing the entire record. And so I do agree with the board's findings. There is no clear and convincing evidence to support the complainant's allegations. And I would move to dismiss the complaint.
Is there a second?
Our second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Ms. Smith, we do appreciate you being here. Dr. Merrill, thank you. And Ms. Carvis, thank you. This will conclude this matter. I forgot it's a busy day for you. Let me see. We were going to... Greg Misavala, is it?
It's N.
So I... Be yours.
Yes.
We are going to go to 7N, Ms. Mueller, and for the record, Ms. Parr will be recusing from this matter. Yeah. All right. And if you two would introduce yourselves for the record, please.
Yes, of course. Mandy Carvis of Wicker Smith appearing with and on behalf of my client, Karen Mueller. Also introduce you.
Karen Mueller.
And if we could hear a brief summary from board staff, please.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board, following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. ARS 32-3251-16K, engaging in any conduct or practice that is contrary to recognized standards of ethics in behavioral health as it relates to the NASW Code of Ethics, 1.07F, Privacy and Confidentiality, and 2.02, Confidentiality. This recommendation is based on the following. From January 2021 to March 2021, licensee provided behavioral health services to husband at agency. On March 11, 2021, licensee sent complainant an email inquiring about coordinating a session with complainant's client, wife, and husband. On March 15, 2021, complainant sent licensee an email which indicated she was not sure getting husband and wife together would be necessary for wife, along with specific information regarding her opinion. That same day, licensee sent husband a text message that included the following. I heard from complainant today. Your wife does not want to meet as a couple. Wife told complainant that she had no idea about a divorce being imminent. She also thinks I am saying disparaging things about her to you. Your wife apparently said you need to work on your feelings about her affair. Licensee shared this confidential information with husband despite not having a release of information from wife. On April 1st, 2021, licensee sent an email to agency that included the following. The complaint that complainant filed is frivolous. Licensee vehemently denies the allegations and stands ready to legally challenge the complaint. Licensee represented the following during her investigative interview. Licensee had never spoken with or met wife and did not have a signed ROI from wife. Licensee believes that complainant should have come to her before filing a complaint with the board. Wife continued to receive services with complainant, and so they are able to work that out. Licensee does not know that husband was hurt by her actions in this situation or that he would never see another therapist. Despite acknowledging that she should not have shared information with husband, it is problematic that licensee continues to maintain that complainant should have come to licensee to resolve the issue before filing a board complaint. In doing so, it appears licensee is attempting to minimize her own conduct and shift the blame to complainant. It is also problematic that licensee repeatedly invokes Section 2.10C of the NASW Code of Ethics as the basis for shifting the blame to complainant. However, licensee's reliance on that section is misguided based on the following. Section 2.01c indicates resolution should be sought when it is, quote, feasible and when such discussion is likely to be productive, end quote. Given the requirements of ARS 323251FF, a mandated reporting requirement, it is neither feasible nor likely to be productive for the complainant to attempt to resolve this issue without filing a board complaint, as it would potentially cause complainant to run afoul of board statutes. Additionally, licensee's representation that no actual harm came to husband and wife attempts to minimize the conduct and lacks insight. In April of 2021, licensee attended and completed the NASW Staying Out of Trouble course. That's all board staff has, unless you have any questions for us.
I apologize. Complainant Ms. Parr is present. Did you wish to address the board? Any questions for the board for the Carver, since you know that you have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Okay, thank you. We'll keep the comments brief. The board is obviously well aware of the situation. I just want to get a couple of high points as to some issues of concern that were raised. I think it's important to be mindful of the fact that, you know, at this point in time when all of these things occurred, we were kind of still living in a new COVID world. We're still living in it now, but at this point in time, this was a very unusual circumstance. People were working remotely. I think it greatly messed with a lot of people's work-life balance. We were responding to emails at weird hours of the day, working, dealing with the stress of the pandemic and things like that. So I think we all know what a challenging time this was for everyone personally and professionally. My client acknowledged that some of that impacted her judgment in this situation. When the agency, which she no longer works for, was contacted about her, they made good comments about her. They specifically said that she was a fine therapist and that anyone could be guilty of a lapse of judgment. With the benefit of hindsight, she does realize and acknowledge that it was inappropriate for her to share the information in the way that she did. And the reason that we cited to the Code of Ethics, because it said when feasible, we don't disagree that Ms. Parr had the requirement of the mandated reporter to report to the board. My client was, in fact, instead disappointed, I guess for lack of a better term, that there was not an effort or an opportunity from a colleague to colleague to at least try to discuss and potentially resolve the situation. It was not necessarily a good fit from an employment standpoint. Ms. Mueller has since moved on. She's recently starting elsewhere, and we think that that will be a good fit for her. She's been practicing for nearly 40 years, has no complaints on her license here or in her prior state, because she did acknowledge that there were some judgment issues and obviously a breach of confidentiality that could have and should have been handled in a different way. She did already complete the Staying Out of Trouble course. We got permission from the board for her to take that course. She did that. She's learned a lot from that course. This is not something that will be repeated. This was an isolated incident from which she has learned a lot and is quite reflective on. And she is happy to address your questions if you have any, but we would recommend that the board proceed with some sort of non-disciplinary measure in light of the fact that she has already completed what we think would be the appropriate coursework to address the areas of concern. Again, she's happy to answer any questions that you may have, and we appreciate your time and consideration.
Do board members have any questions?
Yeah, I just have one. In terms of your completion of the Staying Out of Trouble course, can you talk to what you've learned from that course and how that will change how you practice?
Well, I've taken a lot of ethics classes in my life and in my professional life of 39 years, but this one, I would say, is the gold standard. I learned a lot about documentation. I learned a lot about collaboration, about consultation. I've learned a lot. And like I said, having taken every year, every renewal of my license ethics classes, there was much in this class that I wish they would have had years and years ago that I think would have definitely helped me. And it doesn't matter how many years of practice you're in, you still can err, and I erred. And I take full responsibility for that.
Thank you for that. Can you speak to what you've learned in this particular course that, and how that would have changed the, I guess, the behavior at hand, what you would have done differently?
Well, number one, I would have said to him, who was really, really wanting an answer, you know, can we get together, you know, those kinds of things, because he's already filed for divorce. I would have stopped at, they don't want to get together. I would have stopped right there.
Thank you. That's all that I have.
Are there any additional questions? If you have time to talk amongst ourselves, we ask that you not interrupt.
Yeah, so I think what this brings to mind for me after I read it was that, you know, the importance for every therapist to be aware of two things, and that is, one, how we communicate, and two, what we communicate. And I think that, sure, you know, the pandemic has changed off, you know, how we practice, but I don't think it's changed the appropriate methods of communication. And so that's really the issue that is at hand, is the fact that, you know, not only was the method of communication a little questionable, it was the content of that communication. And so, you know, I think that, you know, in awareness for every therapist about the importance of appropriate communication and respecting the importance of confidentiality obviously is important for every client whom we serve. So with that being said, the violation did occur. It did happen. And so I do agree with the board's findings that there's clear and convincing evidence of unprofessional conduct. I wanted to hear from my peers. Anything further you wanted to add before I make a motion?
Okay.
So I move that we find the licensee in violation. Hold on one second. I have to scroll up. of disclosure of private and confidential information. ARS 3232516K, that includes 1.07 privacy and confidentiality and 2.02 confidentiality. Yes, my motion.
Is there a second?
Bailey, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
So what I didn't see, you know, and maybe this has happened before, but we don't see it here, is I don't see necessarily like a, to me, at least, something that's egregious in nature, right? And I think that the licensee has done a really good job at, you know, not only identifying what she learned, what she would have done different, and seeing the error in this communication. And so with that, I would be okay with a non-disciplinary consent agreement. You know, the licensee's already completed the staying out of trouble course. I'm not sure if there's other courses you guys would recommend that may give more information, something that might be even more educational just for the licensee's sake. And I want to hear from the peers of anything else to add to that.
I have something to add, and I think Ms. Zabala does. But just going to your point regarding egregiousness, I just, for the record, and I think it's important, there was very limited information shared, and I think that's worth noting, because the outreach and what could have been shared and in other situations may be shared could definitely be egregious. So
sure.
The action here, I think what distinguishes it is perhaps what was.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. Wanted to note that. And Ms. Zabala?
So a non-disciplinary consent agreement would be offered if the violations weren't found.
Okay.
With that said, it doesn't mean that you can't have a rediscussion around that. So just, you know, moving forward, if we ever going to offer a non-disciplinary consent agreement or a letter of concern, we don't find the violations. It doesn't necessarily mean that the violation didn't occur, because I think clearly it did occur, but it, whether it raises that level for our board members, if it should be disciplined or not. So with that said, if you wanted to offer an NDCA, then what you may want to consider is a motion to rescind finding the violations. You may want to hear from your colleagues.
Okay, that makes more sense. Thank you for that clarification. So, Peters, thoughts, ideas?
I would certainly not want to vote for rescinding the vote on findings. I believe that that should stay put.
I would agree. We have somebody who's been in practice for a long period of time. While I agree, I think the level of egregiousness goes to discipline, but I would agree that I would still find the violations.
And just another point that the licensee represented my sentiments in that, regardless of how long I've been in practice, I still need to stay up to date on the laws and regulations and requirements and so forth. I need to stay current if I'm going to continue practicing. So I appreciated that comment. And it spoke to me.
Mm-hmm. Others? Okay. Well, and then I do agree with what both of you have stated. So, you know, I continue with finding for the violations, and I'd recommend offering a consent agreement. And in terms of education, again, I'd like to hear from peers anything other than the thing out which has already been completed that you think would be necessary for the licensee for education.
Madam Chair, may I just say something here? So just based on what I'm hearing today, if you don't believe necessarily that any additional education or supervision is needed, you could consider doing the least amount of discipline, and that would be what we call a decree of censure. And so what that would mean, it would be disciplinary, but we wouldn't be ordering her to do anything. So just as a suggestion, education obviously is an option as well. But
okay, then I'd recommend including the decree of censure.
Is there a second? Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Mark Shin.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Thank you both for being here.
Thank you for your time. We appreciate it. You're done with me for the day, so.
Thank you. Have a good one, Ms. Carver. Next time. And for the record, Ms. Parr has rejoined us. And we will be going to 7-0. Paro? Paro present? Here, a brief summary from board staff. I apologize, Ms. Lala. I saw you standing up. I should have gave you more time.
So, Madam Chair, members of the board, Ms. Pissarro is coming before us today for the board members to consider opening up a complaint. She was issued her LMSW license in January of 21. In June of 21, she submitted a request for approval of supervised private practice. In our review of that supervised private practice, it does appear that she's been practicing without direct supervision. So at this time, I'm just asking for the board members to consider opening a complaint so that we can fully investigate it and bring it back for the board's review.
Any questions? Mr. Charles?
Reviewing, there was a few things that might be easily explainable, and there was a few things that might need some more investigation. So I would move that we open the investigation.
Bailey, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Go to 7Q and R. Complainant present. Ms. Pitts? Ms. Pitts is present.
We're getting Ms. Pitts on the phone.
No, I'm sorry.
Just as an update on lunch, I was trying to attempt to cancel it since we're going to be done probably before 1, but it's too late to cancel. So we're going to have lunch and then we.
I know your car. I'm okay.
coffee with me. I'm hungry.
Hello, this is Farah.
Hey, this is Patricia Dobratz, the board's chairperson.
Hello, how are you?
I am doing well, thank you. We just called your matters, and so the procedure for this would be that we'll hear a brief summary from board staff, and then
okay.
We'll give you an opportunity to address the board if you'd like, and then we'll move forward. So we would just ask at this time if you would mute your phone.
Yes.
And brief summary from board staff, please.
Okay, Chair, members of the board, so what you have before you is one report with two complaints. The second complaint was inadvertently opened. It really should have been used as additional information, but it was not. So just to be clear, if you were to go to page 41 of the analysis, the first complaint, 2021-0056, board staff is recommending a dismissal, but because it's one report, it was easier to do it this way. So I ask that we consider that first, and then once you consider that, we'll go to the second complaint where Mr. Ehrman will read the analysis for you.
Is there a motion to dismiss the 2021-56?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second, Chair.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And then we'll hear a brief summary regarding the other.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the board, following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. ARS 3232516B, using fraud or deceit in connection with rendering services as a licensee or in establishing qualifications pursuant to this chapter. This recommendation is based on the following. In November 2020, licensee was involuntarily terminated from agency for falsifying behavioral health documents. Agency's records indicate that over a period of approximately 2 months, from August 2020 to October 2020, licensee prepared 30 billing records with the following discrepancies based on agency's WebEx logs. 3 of the 30 records were underbilled, 9 of the 30 records were overbilled for less than 10 minutes, 18 of the 30 records were overbilled by more than 10 minutes, and 8 of the 30 records were overbilled by more than 30 minutes. 2 sessions had billing times that overlapped for 62 minutes. Licensee represented the following regarding the overbilled records. Licensee was not given any direction on how to use WebEx. Licensee was forced to run sessions on her personal cell phone through WebEx. Licensee did not have a Wi-Fi password for agency, and her connection was weak, and there were many times where the group would have to switch to telephonic sessions. Continuing the group sessions via telephone did not require licensee or the group members to be logged into WebEx, and so WebEx would not have any record of these sessions taking place. Licensee would write down the times on a piece of paper and may have accidentally made a typo on the times. Licensee did not document the phone she used when contacting the clients, and therefore agency would not be able to track those calls. Licensee had no motive to overbill, as there were no bonuses or commissions in her position. Licensee denied having difficulty meeting her quotas or keeping up with her caseload. Additionally, agency records indicated that licensee entered erroneous notes along with corresponding altered emails in the clinical records of 3 separate clients as follows. A note entered by licensee indicates she sent an email to clients 1, 2, and 3 on September 21, 2020. Each client record contains a corresponding email that is dated for September 21, 2020. However, agency's IT department concluded the emails were sent to clients 1, 2, and 3 on September 30th, October 2nd, and October 2nd, respectively, not on September 21st, 2020. Licensee represented the following regarding the altered emails. Licensee denied falsifying or backdating the emails. For the three emails in question, licensee sent them out the first time on September 21st, 2020, as she documented in the clinical notes. Licensee then emailed those clients a second time on September 30th, October 2nd, by copying and pasting the original message as she had not heard back from them. Agency was only able to locate the emails dated on September 21st because she deletes her emails, including from the recycle bin, because she is OCD about staying organized. Licensee denied complainant's representation that she did not delete her emails until after being confronted about the issue. When advised by board staff that agency reported receiving a call from one of the three clients confirming that an email was never sent on September 21st, licensee indicated that that did not make sense. Over a two-month period appears licensee overbilled 27 sessions, which translates to licensee overbilling approximately every other day during that time period. Additionally, there is no record of licensee reporting or discussing these alleged technology issues with agency. Furthermore, licensee's representation regarding what appears to be altered emails in three separate clinical records appears to lack candor. Specifically, licensee's representation that she deleted the original emails due to her obsessive and compulsive organization is contradicted by her inability to accurately maintain and document session times and associated records that led to substantial and systematic overbilling. And that's all board staff has, unless you have any questions for us.
Are there any questions from board members? Ms. Pitts?
Yes, thank you.
Yep. You have up to 5 minutes to address the board. We do have all the materials in this matter, but if there's anything additional that you'd like us to consider, this would be your time to do.
Okay, sounds good. So I take full responsibility for not documenting appropriately when we would switch to telephonic during groups or during an intake in those instances where we would have to switch from WebEx to telephonic. I take full responsibility for that. I realize that that was an oversight and that was not good on my part. So please know I take responsibility for that. And that was my first experience doing telehealth counseling. So I just felt unprepared and did not feel knowledgeable in that area. So I have since taken telehealth courses to be more prepared in that area because I was lacking. And I now know to take much more diligent steps in that area to document what phone I'm using, to verify the client's birth date and so forth. I've also signed up for some additional telehealth courses. In terms of the technology issue, all I can say is that it was extremely frustrating, and I have never experienced having such a lack of technology to do my job. I guess I've been very lucky in other companies, but I did bring this up with Ms. Brandsetter numerous times, really from the beginning, and it was something that really inhibited my ability to do my job, and I knew using my own cell phone was not a good option, but it was the only way to allow my clients to call me back and to be able to do WebEx sessions. And it wasn't until towards the end that a coworker was able to give me Wi-Fi so that I had a better connection. But my clients, also being Medicaid patients, also had incredibly poor Wi-Fi. There is an email that I referred to in October. I believe it was like the 8th or 9th, where I listed out my technology concerns to Ms. Brandsetter, but we had multiple conversations about technology issues and my concerns about using my own phone. So that was just very frustrating. I also had two witnesses that sat with me in group and shadow group that also witnessed the technology issues and switching to telephonic, and I can provide their names if that's helpful. But they witnessed this whole thing unfolding during group. In terms of the emails, I had no motivation to alter an email. that's something I would never do. According to coverage services, you're supposed to put a paper copy of the email in the chart and not just copy and paste the email. So that is just something I would never do. I wouldn't risk my career for that. And I would never risk my career for inflated billing. I've spent my whole career in management auditing charts and making sure that there is no fraud and abuse and educating people not to do that. So that is just something I would not do. It's just too important to me on an ethical level, and it's too important to me to our clients that they get the services they need and money not be used in a fraudulent matter. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Do board members have any questions for Ms. Smith? No questions. This is our time to talk amongst ourselves, so we ask that you not interrupt. And that's the time.
It is. I'll be honest and say that this one was challenging for me for some reason. I had to read this several times. I think what was challenging for me is trying to determine the difference between like a lack of professionalism versus unprofessional conduct as a licensee, right? And part of me was thinking, okay, maybe it's a lack of organization skills, maybe being able to submit notes, that are accurate, et cetera. But after looking at the period of time, that this was over 2 months, that multiple billing errors occurred, and sure, there are a few that were underbilled by a little bit, but there are so many more that were overbilled by a significant amount. Right? I mean, there was one session that was maybe 50 minutes long that was billed for 100 and something minutes. And it's because of the frequency of the billing that I came to the conclusion that there was unprofessional conduct. It was more than just didn't know when a session ended or when a session started. Sure, technology can create issues, but I don't think it would create issues that would lead to adding on, additional amount of time to a session over an hour. So with that being said, I do agree with the board's findings of unprofessional conduct. And before I make a motion, wanted to hear from my peers if anything else to add.
I appreciate how you articulated that.
So with that being said, I'm sorry, Doc.
Caught me. Yes. So we may never get that thought.
I should not be aware.
The issue that came up for me was we are addressing a problem with a licensed associate counselor. The licensed associate counselor, in my belief, should have had better supervision, but the licensed associate counselor should have requested guidance. And so I agree that I don't see the situation as something awful on the one hand, and yet we don't overbill. So yeah, we're trapped with what happened.
Mm-hmm. Agree. Yeah, and what I agree to what Doc said is I just didn't see enough effort being made to correct these behaviors or to get assistance with, what the licensee says was causing the issues. And so I didn't see enough of that. And so with that being said, I move that we find for the violation of fraud and deceit in connection with rendering services, ARS 3232-5116B.
Is there a second?
Our second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
I recommend that we offer the licensee a consent agreement with the following requirements. Completion of the staying out of trouble course and or equivalent. Education related to clinical documentation best practices. And then unless this is in staying out of trouble, education on just proper record keeping. So I would say three CEUs of each of those would be enough.
Yeah, that's in
there. Okay.
I think I need clarity because the clinical documentation best practices would be within
okay.
Staying out of trouble. So if you want those to be separate, I just need to make sure that I understand that.
Okay, so it would just be completion of the staying out of trouble course.
You want to read that back?
So we'd be offering the licensee a consent agreement for 12 months. She would be required within that 12-month period to take 6 contact hours of staying out of the trouble or equivalent. If not signed, invited to a formal interview, and if not accepted, remand to a formal hearing. Would that be your motion, Mr. Chairman?
And could we offer early release, or is that too much?
So it would always be early. After she completes the education, she could ask for early release because at that point there's nothing for us to monitor.
Yeah, so moved.
There a second.
Bailey, second.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Cassandra Parr.
Aye.
Mark Shen.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Madam Chair, may I address Ms. Fitz real quick?
Yes.
Ms. Fitz, this is Toby Zavala, the Executive Director. I just wanted to let you know that I happen to be aware that the Staying Out of Trouble course is going to be, I believe, online. I believe it's September 17th and the 24th, the two parts. So if you're interested in taking that course, you might want to reach out to the Arizona chapter of social workers sooner than later, because that's coming up in the next week or so. That's all I have.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
We appreciate you appearing telephonically, and you'll receive a follow-up from the board. Thank you so much, Ms. Pitts.
Thank you so much. You guys have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
I'll do time for a break and lunch.
No word on lunch. I think we have time probably for the next one.
Is everybody okay moving forward, or do we need a break? Okay. We will go to 7. Are we going to call these two together?
Yes, please.
Okay. So 7F. And
S.
Thank you. my printer cut off the top of that one. Okay, so 7F, Ms. Higgins. Is anybody present for that matter? All right. And S, Ms. Villarreal, we're getting on the phone, correct? Okay. Thank you, Mr.
I should know, right?
Hello?
Ms. Villarreal?
Yes.
This is Patricia, the board's chairperson.
Hi.
We are getting ready to hear the two matters that have the same report. And
okay.
The process will be that board staff will give us a brief summary. If you would like to address us, then you'll have the opportunity. Again, we're just here in regards to opening a complaint, but you would have an opportunity to address the board, and then we would move forward from there.
So okay.
I would ask that you mute your phone for the time being, and
okay.
Hear a brief summary from board staff, please.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the board, both of these licensees are before the members today to consider opening up a complaint. In 521, Ms. Villarreal submitted her LPC application to the board. Within her application, from 419 to 421, she indicated 4,000 work experience hours and 3,000 direct contact hours. Ms. Villarreal indicated she obtained these hours from Ahwatukee Health Recovery and Tri-Change Counseling. Her supervisor was the same supervisor at both agencies. During this time frame, 419 to 421, she was also working full-time at Carl Hayden High School. It didn't seem possible that these hours would have been able to be obtained with this. So due to this discrepancy, board staff subpoenaed Ms. Villarreal's time cards and proof of hours worked from Ahwatukee Health and Recovery and Tri-Change Counseling. Upon receipt of the records from Ahwatukee Health and Recovery, Ms. Villarreal was only employed there from 12:19 to 3:20. Ahwatukee Health and Recovery records also showed that Ms. Villarreal had less than 15 hours of client contact during her employment each month. And according to records of Ms. Villarreal's calendar, when she saw clients while employed at TriChange Counseling, Ms. Villarreal only had 2 to 11 hours of direct client contact each month from 5/1/20 to 4/30/21. According to these records from both agencies, Ms. Villarreal's direct client contact hours and work experience hours do not align with the hours she indicated on her LPC application. Ms. Higgins, the supervisor, also provided various spreadsheets showing how she came up with the number of hours indicated within Ms. Villarreal's LPC application, which also do not align with records obtained from each agency via board staff subpoena. It appears Ms. Villarreal and Ms. Higgins submitted fraudulent information with Ms. Villarreal's LPC application. And again, this matter is just before you today to open up a complaint so we can further investigate the matter.
Are there any questions from board members for Ms. Vella? All right. Ms. Villarreal, as I mentioned, this matter is before us just in regards to opening a complaint, but you would have up to 5 minutes to address the board if you'd like.
Yes, I would. Obviously, I have no experience with the hours, and now when we talked to the executive director, I think it was like a week and a half ago when she presented it to us the way the hours were, it was just a huge mistake. I was under supervision, but I should have been, I take accountability for my part. I should have been more proactive from the very beginning to better understand the hour systems. I'm just shocked by it all. I'm very confused by the hours, to be honest. It was never my intention to falsely claim any amount of hours all my life. I've been a good, abiding citizen. I've never gotten in trouble in my life. I chose this field because I wanted to be of service to others. But this has been just so stressful. It's been a nightmare for me, to be honest, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes to correct this. At the end of the day, Ms. Higgins and I are good people. We're of service to others. It was never my intention to do anything wrongfully. I have a really bad time understanding numbers, and but I am responsible for my part. I should have been more proactive from the very beginning and tried to understand how the supervision and hours and everything works, because that is definitely a deficiency that I have on my part. But never in my life have I been in trouble with the law. And if anything, I chose this field to be of service to others, to be there and help other people. That has always been my intention, regardless of what I have been going through in my own personal life the past 2 years. That has been very difficult. I have a lot going on in my personal life, and maybe I wasn't paying attention to the hours, and I just assume, okay, I have a supervisor if anything is going on, but it's not her fault either. Like I said, I take accountability and responsibility for my part in this matter. And whatever we need to do, I'll do in order to correct this problem.
Thank you. Do board members have any questions at this time? All right, this is our time to talk amongst ourselves. We ask that you not interrupt. And I would suggest that we take Ms. Villarreal's case first. So, Mr. Trotter.
Perfect. So, pretty much, given what we know, the 4 months of employment has actually confirmed, I think, that it's just smart for us to go ahead and open a complaint for further investigation. So, that is my motion.
Bailey, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Ms. Villarreal, there will be a complaint open, and you'll receive follow-up from the board staff.
Okay.
All right. Take care. Thank you for participating.
Thank you for your time.
And Ms. Higgins, matter.
All right. So, same thing, given the information that we know, 4 months of employment by Ms. Fierro, I motion that we open a complaint for further investigation.
Is there a second?
Yep.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Sorry.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Yeah, I'll grant you.
Yes, I can dial on that one. Okay, and I believe that leaves one more disciplinary matter. Is that correct, Ms.
Molly? That is correct, Madam Chair. I would ask that maybe we consider doing that one after lunch. Lunch should be here in about 5 minutes. That matter will take longer than 5 minutes.
Okay.
So my suggestion is that we maybe go ahead and move to the financials and the denial of applications, and hopefully by then our lunch will be here.
All right, so let's go to 9 first. I'm sorry, 10, our applications for licensure have been issued?
Yes, since our last board meeting, board staff has issued 163
licenses. Nice.
I have a question. Do you keep the attrition rate, too, to see, like, what's the net gain in licenses?
We do. We can provide any of that for you.
Okay. Well, you don't need to do it, but...
We're getting close up to 15,000 licensees. When I started, there was less than 10,000.
Wow.
Kudos to board
staff. Big staff number, by the way.
Let's move to the recommended for denial, starting with counseling.
The Counseling Academic Review Committee has reviewed the applications of the following individuals and recommends their denials of licensure. One application based on a failure to pass the required examination, two applications based on a failure to take the required examination, and one application based on a finding of unprofessional conduct. Total denials is 4.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
The Social Work Academic Review Committee has reviewed the applications of 3 individuals and recommends their denial for licensure based on a failure to pass the required examination, and I move it.
Is there a second?
Bailey, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. On the board for substance abuse.
The Substance Abuse Academic Review Committee has reviewed the applications of 5 individuals and has recommended denial for licensure for 2 based on a failure to pass the required examination, 2 based on a failure to take the required examination, and 1 based on a failure to meet minimum requirements, and I move it.
Is there a second?
Bailey, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And we will go to item number 12, a report from Treasurer.
The Treasurer reports...
Are you mocking me?
Never.
On the record?
Yeah, we've all had a chance to review the financial report, and I move that we approve the report as presented.
Do we need 2 motions?
I would prefer 2 just to make it a little cool.
Sorry.
July. All right. Then let's consider the report from July. I move to approve it.
Bailey, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you. And the report for August, I move to approve that.
There a second.
Bailey, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The future agenda items?
We can do future as well as the future meeting dates and then break for lunch.
Go to. We have one disciplinary matter left, which would be 7A, Morgan Fetchel. That'll be after lunch.
Okay.
Since we didn't have time, we wanted to make sure we had enough time. We'll go to agenda item 15, future agenda items. Is there any requests from board members for 17, our future meeting dates. 2 things to note. We do have a formal scheduled. I know Ms. Zavala sent out some communication this week. It is scheduled for October 28th. Those that have responded, they can be present. We have exactly quorum, which means that if you said you could come and then something comes up, we lose that exact quorum. It's really important that you make it a priority, and if something does come up, communicate that to Ms. Zavala as soon as possible, as we know how much goes into preparing for formal hearings. Ms. Zavala? Okay.
They can. It could be very, very difficult because it's going to be likely a 5 to 8 hour formal hearing. Hopefully less, but we're preparing for a long day. So it would be difficult to do on the phone, but absolutely that would be permittable if that was necessary.
Yeah, there's a lot of material sometimes that are handed
out. Not suggested,
out too,
but. So yeah.
And then our next regular meeting is scheduled for Friday, October 8th. Is there anybody who hasn't let Ms. Zavala know that they can't make it? Is there anybody who can't?
Potentially unlikely.
Okay.
Check.
All right. With all of that, I think it is time to take our break. Hopefully lunch will arrive shortly. So it is 11:47. Let's come back at, if I can math appropriately, 12:20.
Yeah, you may even do 12:30 lunches, like on its way in.
Let's split the difference. 12:25, we'll come back. All right, we're going back on the record at 12:26, and going to agenda item number 7A. Morgan Fetchel? Okay, are you the licensee?
Yes.
Okay, so if you wish to go into executive session, there are certain things that we have to go into executive session, or you can request that, and I can have our legal counsel speak to that. The case itself is called in general session. We don't have a choice. We call the matter in general session. We don't have an executive session for the case.
No, she didn't understand.
There's personal medical information that goes under this.
So let me just call the case first, and then we can get some advice. Is the complainant in this matter is not present?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. And then, Ms. Zavala, do we want to give some information regarding executive session and the purpose and possibility before we get started, or wait until...
I just wanted to share with the board members, executive session would be if the board members requested to go into executive session for legal advice, and the other purpose for executive session would be into talking specifics about behavioral health issues. It's my opinion, based on the analysis, there isn't anything that we're going to be sharing that requires it to go into executive session. With that said, if a board member or licensee has wants to communicate about behavioral health issues, then at that time you may want to consider going.
And it would be limited to that type of conversation and only for that purpose, and then we would go back to general session.
Yeah, I was legally advised to and write that letter to request an executive session, and I believe when I spoke to the investigator, she had acknowledged that. But whatever, it is what it is. We'll go forward with this. It is taken care of, so...
Yeah, legally it's for those two purposes, and so if that comes up during your time to address the board, then you can request at that time for that limited purpose, and it would just be fine.
I'm just interested in getting it done, so let's go ahead.
Okay, so we have all the materials from the case. We'll hear a brief summary from board staff, and then it'll be your opportunity to address the board. Could you please introduce yourself for the record?
I am Morgan Fetchel, LPC, currently practicing at LifeWell Behavioral Wellness.
And can we hear the brief summary from board staff, please?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board, following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violations. ARS 323251L, engaging in any conduct, practice, or condition that impairs the ability of the licensee to safely and competently practice the licensee's profession, and ARS 323251-16B, using fraud or deceit in connection with rendering services as a licensee. This recommendation is based on the following.
In September 2020, licensee was involuntarily terminated from agency for falsifying behavioral health documents. Agency concluded that over a period of approximately 5.5 months, licensee overbilled for behavioral health services nearly 295 hours. Based on licensee's commission-based salary structure, agency concluded licensee was overpaid by over $16,000. Additionally, complainant advised board staff that agency had to send back over $35,000 in behavioral health service fees due to licensee's overbilling. Licensee represented the following in her initial written response to the complaint. Licensee has difficulty with mathematical calculations and short-term working memory. These issues were worsened significantly after an adverse reaction to anesthesia in 2011. Upon her hire and in the years afterward, licensee repeatedly disclosed these issues with her memory and numbers to supervisor, who is now retired. Upon being terminated, licensee contacted supervisor, who verbally acknowledged that they had discussed licensee's deficits on multiple occasions. However, when licensee reached out repeatedly to request a written statement from supervisor, supervisor did not answer or respond to licensee. The transition to telemedicine happened overnight, and licensee was not properly trained or prepared for the abrupt transition. Licensee was not trained to check call records to ensure the accuracy of the time that she was listing. Licensee represents she uncovered anomalies in agency spreadsheet. Along with a written response, licensee submitted a letter from physician dated October 2020, which was a month after termination, which indicated the following. Licensee has been a patient of physician since 2005. Licensee reports experiencing significantly increased difficulty with focus, concentration, and short-term memory following her 2011 surgery. Licensee also sent board staff an email in July of 2021 indicating the following. Licensee was emailed a spreadsheet allegedly containing Verizon call logs and Google meeting records. Licensee was not provided with the actual records, and someone must have imported them into the spreadsheet. The records are clearly not accurate. In hindsight, licensee finds the timeline fishy. Based on licensee's assertions regarding her cognitive impairment and the accuracy of agency spreadsheet, board staff obtained the following records. The last 5 years of licensee's medical records from physician, the actual Verizon and Google records, licensee's clinical supervision notes from April 2018 to June 2020. Despite representing that she had cognitive impairment since 2011, there was no corroborating evidence in licensee's medical record that she had reported that she had or had reported any such impairments prior to being informed of the overbilling. In September of 2021, which was the month that licensee was terminated from agency, there's a note in physician's record indicating the following. Licensee would like an evaluation for her short-term memory impairment. Licensee has not seen a neurologist. Licensee has not spoken to her primary care physician about these problems. Licensee wants documentation of cognitive impairment for her work. It should be noted that the physician's evaluation did not find any corresponding cognitive impairment, and licensee was referred to a neurologist for further evaluation. However, licensee did not visit the neurologist. Despite licensee's concerns regarding the veracity of agency spreadsheet, board staff's review of the actual Verizon and Google records did not reveal any substantive deviations when compared to agency spreadsheet. Despite licensee's assertion that she repeatedly disclosed her cognitive impairments to supervisor, board staff's review of over 2 years of supervision records found no evidence of any such disclosures. Licensee represented the following regarding the overbilling issues during her investigative interview. Licensee would do rough calculations ahead of time and forgot to go back and correct them. Licensee was working from her bed with her laptop and didn't even have a desk or room to use scrap paper. Licensee has never used an iPhone and did not know how to check the call logs or the Google records. Licensee missed the one-hour training agency provided. Agency waited until licensee got her LPC before bringing this issue to her attention. Licensee speculates that agency was trying to shelter supervisor. Licensee represented the following when board staff advised her that it appears she earned an additional $16,000 from overbilling. Licensee indicated there's a good number of times that she accidentally underbilled and that she had no need for $16,000 extra dollars. Licensee represented the following regarding her cognitive issues during her investigative interview. Licensee did repeatedly verbally inform supervisor about her memory deficits during their supervision meetings. Licensee thinks supervisor stopped responding to her because supervisor is buddy-buddy with complainant, and licensee thinks complainant got to her. It is highly concerning that it appears licensee intentionally falsified session times for her personal financial gain. Licensee's explanation that she was not able to properly keep track of her session times due to missing the one-hour training session and not being able to access her call logs because she was not familiar with iPhones is problematic for the following reasons. Licensee acknowledges having a personal training session with supervisor. Licensee acknowledges that rather than asking anyone how to access the call logs, licensee instead chose to document her best estimate. Licensee does not deny making mistakes, but represents that they were honest mistakes. However, licensee's estimates do not appear to be honest mistakes or minor overbilling miscalculations. Specifically, board staff's random review of the actual call logs revealed that during a 10-day period in August of 2020, licensee overbilled sessions by more than 30 minutes on 14 separate occasions. Not only does licensee's explanation that agency waited until licensee obtained her LPC before bringing these issues to her attention attempt to shift blame for the overbilling, it also has no basis in logic since agency was forced to repay over $35,000 in overbilled sessions. Furthermore, licensee's representations that any overbilling errors that may have occurred were due to a cognitive impairment are contradicted by the following facts. Not only do licensee's medical records not provide any evidence of cognitive impairment, licensee alleges, the records arguably provide evidence that licensee may have sought a diagnosis for the specific purpose of exculpating herself from her overbilling issues with agency. Additionally, when confronted with the fact that there is no evidence in her medical records of cognitive impairment, she alleges, licensee attempts to shift the blame to a physician who has treated her for more than a decade by stating, quote, it's not that I never mentioned it if it was never documented. Additionally, although licensee represents she told her supervisor of 2 years about her cognitive impairment on multiple occasions, there is no evidence in the clinical supervision notes. Furthermore, not only does she not have corroboration from supervisor, licensee once again attempts to shift the blame by indicating the complainant and supervisor are collaborating against her. That's all board staff has, unless you have any questions for us.
You have 9 minutes to address the board.
Okay. Start here. So in terms of after the drug-induced delirium following the surgery, which just for a little background, I was like babbling incoherently. I was hallucinating. I didn't know who my mother was. I was not right. After that, I had issues with speech production, which got better over the months and years, but the memory never really recovered. When I went to that appointment, there had been 2 meetings with my former employer that resulted in termination. The first meeting, I was told that I would have an opportunity and provide medical records substantiating the condition. However, a week later, I was summoned to an impromptu meeting and fired on the spot for forgetting to use a UD modifier in a paper note, which I wasn't very familiar with writing. Usually paper notes would be submitted if they were after the documentation was due by midnight. I didn't typically have late notes, so I hadn't done one. My former employers, you know, insist, oh, you were trained. It's like, yeah, I was trained in 2018 before we had a UD modifier or a GT modifier. So that was ultimately the reason that he said he let me go. I definitely did tell supervisors, and it's not to, like, shift blame. It's because she acknowledged me in hindsight. I wish I had recorded that phone call. I'm not the most paranoid person, and I just didn't foresee a situation where I would need to do that. Yeah, so I was in the process of obtaining the medical documentation when I was fired on the spot, and none of that was given any consideration. Upon the first meeting, I drafted a long list of ways, like essentially accommodations that would, you know, ensure my time reporting, you know, allow closer supervision. My former employer, Clinton, is the name of the CEO, just messaged back, "I'm not reading this. And you have a task to do," like in all caps. And I was like, okay. I think the strategies I've implemented, I know, have been helpful. At my new position, I keep this little sticky note next to. I do first initial, last initial, start time, end time. And that way I'm able to keep track. Also, my work phone is now an Android, which I'm much more familiar with. So I do know how to check those call records. I'm trying to think of other things that... Oh, another thing, too, with the appointment at the psychiatrist's office. After the thing happened with the anesthesia, I was basically told, like, well, you know, it's a risk. When anytime you go under anesthesia, you might not come out, you know, the same, and that's a risk you assume. So a lot of people have told me since, like, you should sue, but again, just not who I am. And I didn't really see a purpose in getting, like, further assessment or documentation. I mean, at that point, I was 21 years old. I was going through school, and I was just focused on finding ways to adapt, you know, in light of the shortcomings in my memory. So I know in the report they mentioned, you know, using sticky notes and setting alarms. I keep, like, a chronological to-do list. So I find ways to stay organized. And, you know, had this been brought to my attention, say, week two of telemed, I would have devised a strategy to make sure it's accurate. But I wasn't given an opportunity to provide medical documentation or to, you know, demonstrate changes in behavior. None of that. I will say, just real quick touching on, there was a Saturday and a Sunday where it showed I had a 3.5 and a 4 hour session on Google Hangouts video chat. I never kept my work computer charged or on during the weekends. Like, that simply did not happen. In no way am I saying that, like, Google's conspiring against me or Verizon's conspiring against me. That's ridiculous. What I'm saying is, if there's such an obvious glaring error that I know for a fact did not happen, in my mind, that kind of calls into question the validity of the records. And the meeting, it wasn't to, like, exculpate myself. It was to just to try to find some documentation to, you know, demonstrate what I've had going on. But again, I never got an opportunity to share that. I was hardly allowed to speak during that final meeting and was terminated effective immediately. One thing I did want to add is just that I have never worked for anything so hard in my life. I decided I wanted to do this when I was 15, and all of my effort and blood, sweat, and tears has been towards this. This is kind of what I decided is my life work and, like, my way of giving back, and it's incredibly important to me. I would never, never do anything intentional to jeopardize that. I mean, I want this to be my career, not just, you know, a short job. But the strategies I've implemented are working at my new workplace. Both of my supervisors, I believe you guys reviewed the notes from Jared and Linda. Linda had observed me rendering services and kind of seen the system that I do to keep myself on track, and neither she nor my current supervisor, Jared, have any real concerns. Last thing I would stress is just, I mean, to the best of my knowledge, I don't believe I've ever harmed clients in any way. I know that's a big part of, you know, why the board is a thing, is to protect the welfare of clients. I have great relationships with my clients. I did good work. I know I help people because they would tell me. You know, so I didn't do anything to negatively affect the clients. I can admit it's entirely possible I made mistakes. I'm not great with numbers. So that's entirely possible, and I'll take responsibility for that. But again, they were honest mistakes. If this had been brought to my attention, I would have found a way of fixing it. But it was kind of like somebody asked me, well, you know, why didn't you fix the problem? Well, I didn't know there was a problem. So it's kind of hard to know to fix a problem if you don't know the problem exists, which is the only reason that I bring up the fact that if they had been closely monitoring productivity and had questions or concerns early on in telehealth, I don't understand why being under direct supervision that was not brought to my attention and addressed to find some sort of solution. So that's all I can think of for right now. I think that about covers it. My part.
Have any questions for the license?
I have a few. I read in the investigative material that you actually ended up seeing or working with most of your clients telephonically. Can you explain why that occurred?
The pandemic?
Right, the telephone? I mean, was that your mode? I'm just kind of...
That was the mode we were given because eventually the company, they didn't believe Zoom was secure, like HIPAA secure, so they decided to go with Google Hangouts chat, and it took a while to kind of get used to that, and a lot of clients weren't familiar, didn't have Google accounts, so couldn't do that, so a lot of it was taking place over the phone. I think it's been extended through the end of the year for like more like emergency only sessions now. But yeah, we were just doing it over the phone. And another reason I didn't really want to do video chat was because I was working out of my bedroom and I feel like it's a boundary issue to bring clients virtually into my bedroom. I did not feel comfortable with that. So most of it was telephonic. But the agency, I mean, it's not like we had an option like, oh, you can keep doing in-person work or not. We were told absolutely not. And I get that. I respect that decision to keep people safe.
Sure. I was more just the distinction between doing a, you know, video call, you know, on their whatever platform versus just calling your clients on the phone. And
right. And again, it was because, I mean, a lot of the clients I worked with, they were all SMI. Many of them did not have much in the way of financial resources, Wi-Fi, smartphones, or just ability to use Zoom or, in that case, Google Hangouts. So there were some kind of legitimate barriers, but I was grateful that Access kind of extended that and expanded upon it given the circumstances, obviously.
And then with that, you commented that you often scheduled 12-hour days back-to-back. Mm-hmm. Why would you do that?
Because, without trying to throw anybody under the bus, I will just say there is a culture at People Empowering People, and they highly emphasize, like, make your numbers. A lot of clients or a lot of coworkers would schedule like a more normal schedule, but then if they had no shows, which inevitably happened, they would end up having to work Saturdays and Sundays so that they could get a decent paycheck and pay their mortgage, pay their bills. My thing, it's another boundary thing where weekends are weekends. I'll work as hard as I want during the week, but I need that time on the weekends. So to make sure I met my productivity, I would just work pretty long days most days and just get in as much as I could so I'd never have to even think about working a weekend day because that's just kind of not what I signed up for. I need some work-life balance there.
Okay. So considering if I'm listening and, you know, following all the material and, you know, following all of the history that you have with just, you know, having to make all these accommodations, I read through, you know, lots of them, which on one hand, great. And then on the other hand, it seems so risky. I'm wondering, why would you take that risk with all knowing all the different accommodations that we needed in order to be able to stay focused and be effective? Would we schedule 12 hours day to day to day to day of this?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see the issue with, like, the 12 hours being back-to-back in terms of, like, reasonable accommodations. I think I did mention in the letter that my first supervisor, Lori, we would do our weekly, like, check of, like, no-show attended frequency in person because it was hard for me to do on my own time and try to recall. So So that was a reasonable accommodation she did provide. But again, I came up with this whole list, and they said they wouldn't even read it.
But I guess, do you find it risky for yourself, knowing everything you've done on your own? Okay, so I'm just following all of that. Everything that you have said that you're doing on your own, do you not find it risky then to have that kind of a day?
I can definitely acknowledge that was certainly a risk and was certainly not ideal or acceptable. Definitely not. Again, if I had been aware of it, I would have made darn sure that I found a way of getting around it. I've had to make a lot of functional adaptations to get by in life, and so this just would have been another challenge. But I've essentially implemented everything I suggested at People Empowering People, and I'm using it now with my clients with LifeWell, and it's been smooth sailing. I just kind of have to be made aware of a situation. I can be creative in finding ways to get around it and to compensate. I've had to. I didn't have a choice, I was in the middle of college when that happened, and I was determined to finish it. And another thing, too, that one of the things the CEO said was like, well, you have a master's degree. And I didn't really think to say it at the time, but I'm not saying I'm unintelligent. I don't think I'm unintelligent, but having memory deficits doesn't make you stupid. And I felt like that was kind of an ableist perspective in that sense. And again, I also feel like ADA did not come into play here, because according to ADA, you don't have to disclose a disability up front. But once, if it is to become a problem, then reasonable accommodations are to be made. But I was not given an opportunity to try anything to demonstrate that I had, resolved the behavior, whatever standards they set out. I just simply didn't get a chance because of that UD modifier on a note, which was not falsified, by the way. It was resent and scanned into her chart. I didn't change anything about the content, the length. The only thing was I forgot the modifier, which I had a coworker who, after I got fired, went back into their templates, and they did not have a single template with an example of a UD or a GT modifier where that needed to go in a paper note. So on that little part of it, I would say lack of training, but I also do take personal responsibility. And I'd kind of like to answer another question that you had asked previously about, what was it you asked? It was, okay, I'm blanking. I'll take more questions. It'll come back to me. But, anybody else have any?
I just have one last question.
Yeah. Sure. Sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you, but just to follow up before I forget on where you were going with your questions.
Yep.
On average, how many clients are you scheduling per day and per week now?
Now? So with LifeWell, they default scheduling to 30-minute sessions. So in a day from 8 to 4:30, I'm terrible at math, but I'd say probably over 10. Most of those are pretty short sessions. I do have some clients that need a little bit higher level of care and need the full hours, so I do try to accommodate that, but I'm not allowed to work outside my shift, So I see as many as I can while I'm there and help them to the best of my abilities, but...
How much time do you build in for doing your notes and administrative?
I document notes concurrently, and that was another thing that I discussed back at PEP when I was having my job training with their clinical coordinator. I told her, I don't have a good memory. I need to be documenting as I go to make sure it's accurate. Like, I don't want to quote somebody wrong. I don't want to misrepresent something accidentally. And I can't do an hour session and then come back and remember everything that's pertinent to a note. So towards the end of PEP, they had actually encouraged people to go towards concurrent documentation, and that's something that at my new company, they're like, well, it's not ideal. It can be kind of create a barrier, but I kind of set my computer to the side so I can still look and be open with the person. But then when there's, a certain intervention or a certain behavior or symptom, I'm able to, log that. So I don't spend a lot of time after my sessions doing notes. I've, of course, other documentation to keep up on as well.
Thank you. Sorry, Dr. Bailey.
No, it's great. Yeah. So with that, if we were doing concurrent note-taking, how did we not just include the time we start and conclude the note with the time we end?
So that's what I'm doing now, is I have that sticky note with first initial, last initial, start time, end time. The reason that wasn't happening at home, one, there was a lot of household distractions. Two, I didn't have a desk where I could even sit a piece of paper or a sticky note to try to keep track of things. When I had done in-home counseling, which is what People Empowering People did prior to the pandemic, I had a way of keeping myself on track, which was get to client's house, pop open the computer, record start time, at the end of the session, finish the note, submit, end time, close it, on to the next one. And the CEO did ask me, well, why didn't you keep doing that? That computer got so slow that it was literally like on life support. It was plugged in 24/7 to keep it on. So powering it down, closing it, powering it back up, just, in my opinion, a waste of time. But that's kind of the difference between what I had done in person versus, you know, obviously, again, I acknowledge falling short on the telemedicine stuff, but I've got a much better handle on it now.
Thank you.
It'll be our time to talk amongst ourselves. We ask that you not.
Most of my questions were trying to discern between, do we actually have, you know, stuff going on? And if we do have stuff going on, then, you know, what do we need to do to address that? And if we don't have stuff going on, then, you know, why does this happen? And I'm not convinced either way, really. So so regardless of, I guess, the motivation, the investigating material suggests it happened, so I'm going to fine for the violations, and I just don't see any way around that part. So I'll stick with that for now. But I would move for that. Anybody see anything different than it occurring? And for a lot of reasons, maybe why, on either side of the argument, right? If we have something going on, contributing it to it, versus maybe we don't.
I agree with. It happens. I mean, there are excuses, but it's still part of the job, so it still happens. All the violations.
Right, when you take the totality of which makes it very difficult. That this was ongoing. In a professional way, and I get the first week, right, of doing telehealth and that transition, and mm-hmm. and then you know, maybe even the second week, but at some point, why are we not?
Yeah, it just feels like there were a lot of extra efforts made in the past, but not now. That's where I'm struggling. Like, why didn't we have all those efforts put in place if we knew we had this huge history of stuff? And then, yet we're not using all of those now. Why? I can't wrap my head around that. And today did not help me with that. So, okay. So I move that we do fine for the violations of fraud and deceit in connection with rendering services, which is ARS 3232-5116L and ARS 3232-5116B.
Second.
Otter second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
So I'm prepared to recommend that we offer a consent agreement. I would welcome feedback. If we do have a situation in place where we need to put in a lot of accommodations, if I go that route, then I'm not quite sure we're safe right now. And so then there was a part of me that said, maybe we need some evaluations or something. If we're going to go down that path of I have some issues that are contributing to me having a difficult time, then do we need to go down the path of having evaluations done so we know? And then if not, then we need to not utilize that as a reason and get all this training taken care of and attend to what we need to for minimum practice standards. So I am a little bit at a, there was a part of me that said, hey, maybe we need a neuropsych eval, you know, just to make sure we're good to go.
But I just threw that out. That's where my head went. And then I had a lot of other discontinuing ed that I'd be more than prepared to also read off.
I wonder if, throwing it out there, I wonder if we did something in terms of very extensive clinical supervision,
sure,
including observations. I know we've got some feedback from supervisors here, but I'm wondering if that would highlight a need for but I don't know. But that's where I would be leaning, is more towards the clinical supervision.
So with that said, the clinical supervisor could be advised to read through the board complaint and kind of what were some of the possible contributing factors, and to kind of listen for that and maybe even ask for that during the supervision in order to make a decision as a supervisor. Do I need to recommend other resources? Yeah. That would be okay.
About safety or, you
absolutely.
Know.
Okay. So I'm prepared to offer consent agreement for 2 years. I would say supervision twice a month for the 24 months. With the understanding that the board complaint would be reviewed and just considered to be included into the supervision piece. I would recommend a grad level class in ethics. I would recommend.
So could that be done with continuing education, like that are intended for licensed individuals?
Ms. Special, this is our time to
talk. Oh, I'm sorry.
So right now we're brainstorming what is going to be offered to you, and then just so you understand, but then board staff will follow up so that you'll have everything to consider, and if you have questions, then can.
Okay, I apologize.
That's okay.
I did go back and forth on that. I think the reason why I was leaning in that direction was the inattention to, you know, say I'm not prepared or this is not a healthy environment for me to work in. You know, how do we stand up for those things? Because those are our ethical obligations, regardless of whatever we're directed to do. Our license in above everything is what we are bound to uphold in an ethical way. Otherwise, we can't work at all. So that's why I was leaning in that way, but I'd be open. The other pieces, though, were 60 minutes in self-care and burnout. The 12-hour a day is just, I'll just go on record saying that is not a healthy schedule. We are not able to focus at all, let alone if we have other things in place for us. And so just thinking that that's a healthy way of working is a little bit concerning for me. And maybe.
Am I allowed to make a comment on that?
This is our time to talk amongst ourselves. I'm sorry, but we're brainstorming what we're going to be offering. And so.
I would add 60 minutes of staying out of trouble or the equivalent for documentation, you know, just review and inundation of that. And also 60 minutes on telehealth. If we're going to do telehealth, we need to be confident in doing telehealth. So I won't budge on that one.
And just to go on the record as saying, and I think this needs to be part of to be insight, it's not only about self as a therapist doing 12-hour days, but I can't imagine that you're providing good quality care for client 9, 10, 11, 12. So, like, what does that do to the quality of care? I think that needs to be explored in clinical supervision.
Does anybody have a thought on the grad class? I did waffle on that. So,
it can help to put things in perspective again. It can help to refresh and reset. So,
the possibility of early release, or a lesser amount. Just asking. Sometimes you offer.
You just accomplish that, because that way we can do the supervision through the 2 years and make sure that we're in a healthy work environment. We're being effective in what we're doing. Developed, if we need to, we've developed other accommodations and standards for ourselves to keep on target with everything that's expected.
Sure. Well, like you're saying, it's supervisor after the year, that they don't feel like it's necessary for bi week, it can at least be monthly after the first year. Are you okay to that or no? Based off the supervision, supervisor's feedback during the first year.
My head goes to the supervision given in the agency setting. I don't know. I'm good with the 2 years of clinical oversight. But
yeah, and
if anybody else agrees, I'd be open.
Just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
And the licensee is independently licensed. So we have, in my opinion, a greater burden to really make sure that whatever happens, the licensee gets to take full advantage of opportunities for learning and reset and changing and reframing for herself and so forth. I don't think we need to scrimp on the old family recipe.
Madam Chair, quick question. And not to put you in a tough position, I don't know how that works, but you were referencing supervision in an agency setting versus the way you said it implied to me that there's something I don't know, and so I'm trying to understand what did you mean by supervision? It seemed like you meant supervision in an agency setting versus supervision in what other setting is there that I'm in?
Right, and so oftentimes, you know, if we have to go out and get a supervisor and find a supervisor that's a good fit, there's usually some financial obligation around that as well versus who's going to supervise me in the agency. I know how that looks. Usually, it's not the supervisee or the person getting supervision usually doesn't have a whole lot of choice. So in my head, I just think, do we need more time to just really get through everything that we hope to get through versus how clinical supervision usually looks when we're going out and contracting somebody to help us go through this and everything else that we also are responsible for in that process.
That's what I think,
too.
And I would hope that we would stipulate that the clinical supervision in an agency setting, that the person who does that would still need to be on our clinical supervision registry.
Okay, and how would I go about determining, because my current supervisor is...
Ms. You're going to get, we're still crafting this, and then we need to vote on it. And then board will be following up with you with everything in writing, and then that will be your time to ask questions. And
okay.
I just wanted to note in that conversation made me even more sure of the 2 years, too, because if she left the agency setting and goes into private practice within 2 years, clinical supervision would then still be required. And so I feel better with that. Thank you for having me.
Okay.
I want to bring that back, Mr. Trotter.
So we would be offering the licensee a consent agreement for 24 months. She'd be required to get clinical supervision twice monthly. The clinical supervisor will obtain a copy of the report, and the issues that are addressed in the report will also be part of that clinical supervision. In addition to that, they will address board statutes and rules, burnout, insight, and documentation. Additionally, she'll be required to take a 3-credit graduate level course in behavioral health ethics, 6 contact hours in burnout, 6 contact hours in staying out of trouble or the equivalent, and 6 contact hours in telehealth. And if not assigned, she'd be invited to a formal interview, and if not accepted, remanded to a formal hearing. Is that your motion?
For the burnout, can we just add and self-care? That way, it doesn't have to be just specifically that. Just, okay. Yep. So moved. Thank you.
Is that your motion?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Shen, second.
Kimberly Bailey?
Aye.
Robert Charles?
Aye.
Mary Coonrod?
Aye.
Cedric Davis?
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz?
Aye.
Cassandra Parr?
Aye.
Mark Shin?
Aye.
Antoine Trotter?
Aye.
Madam, I'm sorry. I was going to ask if I could address Ms. Special. Because you had a lot of questions in regards to the stipulations. The first part of next week, you will get a consent agreement that will be emailed to you. Once you receive that, you can reach out to Jacqueline Harris, who's your assigned investigator, and she can help step you through that process of how to find things and how to make things happen.
Okay. Sounds like a plan. Well, I appreciate you guys and your consideration and all this. This has been one of the most stressful situations in my life. I can do this. I'm willing to jump through whatever hoops I have to keep practicing my profession. So thank you guys all for your time. I appreciate it, and I will certainly walk the straight and narrow and get this all resolved.
We appreciate you being here, and best of luck to you. Hopefully you'll find this all very beneficial.
Yes, I think so. All right. Well, thank you guys.
I believe that concludes all of our disciplinary matters.
Yes.
The only thing
left on our agenda, unless I'm missing something, is 16, which would be call for public comment. Our investigators usually don't want to publicly comment. I will thank board staff because they implemented one of my requests for the investigative reports, and so that is much appreciated, putting the names on top. So thank you, board staff. If there is
since you brought it up, did you like the format?
I liked it a lot. Yes, I really did. It makes it easier at least.
Some of them weren't done, but next month all of them will be done that way.
Anything else?
No.
Is there a motion to adjourn?
Davis moves it.
Trotter second.
All those in favor.
Aye.
Have a great weekend. Thank you all. Please don't forget the formal and our regular October meeting. Let Toby know if you can't make it.
Nice.
Yes, until next time.
Oh. She was asked.